I'm running for mayor.
This Democratic socialist will probably be the next mayor of Minneapolis. And socialist Zoran Mondani is likely to be the next mayor of New York City.
We have to continue to elect more socialists. And we have to ensure that we are unapologetic about our socialism.
But they should be apologetic. Socialism always fails.
And so it is that in the heart of the American Midwest, where the rusting skeletons of factories once symbolizing unyielding industry, pockets of demographic transformation are quietly reshaping the cultural landscape, inching toward Sharia-compliant majorities that challenge the foundational principles of our republic.
America, the American government, secularism, democracy, capitalism, these are cancers. Non-Muslims are tired of this cancer. They're tired of the American government. They're tired of democracy. They want to see a new way of life. And as Muslims, we have to understand that we have that new way of life.
Take Hamtramck, Michigan, that tiny enclave swallowed by Detroit's sprawl, where census data reveals almost 70% of its 28,000 residents now identify as Muslim, the first and only such city in the United States. It's an all-Muslim city council wielding unanimous power over decisions that echo foreign theocracies rather than the United States Constitution. Just across the line in Dearborn, Michigan, the beating heart of Arab America, over 54% of the 90,000 souls call themselves Muslim, a concentration so dense it accounts for more than half the city's fabric, with mosques towering over streets where calls to prayer mingle with the hum of Ford assembly lines, signaling a trajectory where Sharia's shadow lengthens with every immigrant wave. These aren't isolated anomalies. They're harbingers of a broader shift, fueled by relentless migration and higher birth rates, as Pew projections warn that America's Muslim population, already swelling to 4.5 million, will double to 8.1 million by 2050.
Hezbollah, bombed the embassy in Beirut, and including many Americans, so I just feel it's quite inappropriate.
You're an Islamophobe, and although you live here, I want you to know, as mayor, you're not welcome here. And the day you move out of the city will be the day that I launch a parade celebrating the fact that you moved out of the city.
Carving deeper enclaves in urban strongholds like Minneapolis, where Somali communities push the metro area's Muslim share toward a robust 2.5 to 3% statewide, with local densities in the Cedar Riverside neighborhood rivaling those overseas outposts of influence.
Mayor of Hamtramck, Michigan, Muslim. Mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, Muslim. Mayor of Richardson, Texas, Muslim. Vice President of the Minneapolis City Council, Muslim. U.S. House Representative, Muslim. U.S. House Representative, Muslim. U.S. House Representative, Muslim. New York City mayoral candidate, Muslim. Minneapolis mayor candidate, Muslim.
Yet, as these transformations unfold in the quiet corners of Michigan and Minnesota, the federal machinery stirs with countermeasures aimed at fortifying the ramparts against any encroachment of foreign legal shadows. Two Republican lawmakers thrust forth a bold congressional bill, a legislative dagger aimed straight at the heart of Sharia's insidious creep, barring American courts from enforcing any judgment, decree, or arbitration decision rooted in Islamic law or any alien system that dares violate our sacred constitutional rights, a direct rebuke to the creeping normalization of parallel justice systems. And you may recall the Trump administration unleashed Executive Order 14161 on Inauguration Day, an ironclad edict resurrecting the specter of travel restrictions from terror-prone nations, explicitly designed to shield the homeland from the very ideological threats that Sharia embodies.
She's punished and she's stoned to death. And according to the Sharia, again, when it comes to women, they must be.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined today by Nicholas J. Fuentes. He, of course, has already been on with Alex for two full hours, so we really appreciate him giving us so much of his time, and he'll be on with us for this first hour. And we got a lot of breaking news and big videos to get to. But I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Nick Fuentes. You can follow him on X at Nick J. Fuentes, NicholasJFuentes.com. And, of course, he streams on Rumble. You can search America First or Nicholas J. Fuentes. Nick, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, what's going on, Harrison? Great to be with you.
Very, very good to have you on, man. How you been? I cannot believe it's been 2 weeks since Charlie Kirk's brutal murder. It feels like it happened yesterday. How's the last 2 weeks been for you?
It's been difficult, I have to say. I don't know how you guys are handling it over there, but I'm sure you must be upgrading your security. My first reaction is I'm worried about copycats, you know, or maybe if there's an attack or conspiracy or something. So it's been a little nerve-wracking, but I've been hanging in there. I just can't imagine what they're going through, you know, his family, his people over there. But it's a scary time for all of us. How you been holding up?
It's sort of the same. It's kind of like, I'm not sure how much more safe we could be, but the violence is sort of spiraling out of control. I thought your coverage of everything the day after, I think it was that Friday you did a show, it was really spectacular. And I could tell it had affected you personally quite a bit. You know, obviously, you know, you were not the biggest fan of Charlie Kirk, and I've sort of felt the same way while he was alive. But since then, I've gotten this whole new appreciation for who he was and what he accomplished. Has your opinion of Charlie changed in the last 2 weeks as you've seen maybe more stuff that you hadn't seen before?
No, not really. Not tremendously. I mean, not my opinion. I'll say it this way. My opinion of his profession has not changed at all. And I'm surprised that for so many it seems to be. I think... And that's natural. He just was brutally executed and people feel sorry for him. They feel sorry for his family. I get it. But I don't really think that his political legacy is that much different now than it was then. The one thing that has changed to me, this is what my opinion has changed about. And I've been saying this a lot and I really feel this way. I was shocked at the outpouring of support from millions of people. I was surprised at how many people were really touched by his life and his work. And in particular, people were touched by his faith. Mm. And that is the part that I never really recognized. And it is important to recognize that we are all Christians. You know, where we are Christians, we know. I know you're a Christian, I'm Christian. We're all different kinds of Christians, but we all do profess the same God. And although politically my view hasn't changed at all, I did not agree with nearly anything that he was about in that sense. I guess I never recognized his Christian testimony where I should have, I think. And, you know, now the evidence is overwhelming for that. So I think he was pretty remarkable in that way. But how about you? Did your view of him change since he was killed?
It has, honestly. I don't think I appreciated what a force he was, how impactful he was, and how big the organization was. And, you know, kind of like you, I almost feel bad. I remember my grandmother calling me probably 5 years ago and going, there's this young man named Charlie Kirk, and he's amazing. And I went, well, you know, he's actually not really on the, and she was kind of disappointed that I wasn't a big fan of Charlie Kirk, and she'd been so impressed by him. And I'm kind of like, ah, man, maybe grandma was right. Maybe he did have something going on. I think maybe he could have been present. I didn't realize how influential he really was. And, you know, I guess it's a little bit of regret on my part for not appreciating, you know, who he was while he's alive. And I guess that's the martyr complex, right? But I want to get into, like, who you think did it, your reaction to the reaction to you not blaming Israel, if that makes sense. Because people have gotten so mad at you and are just ready to throw you under the bus because you don't go with the first, conspiracy theory offered. How do you feel about, you know, the way people are reacting to you? Because I gotta say, it's a little bit ironic because I think I texted this to you because the Groypers say about us a lot of things I'm hearing about you now. So I feel like maybe you understand some of the frustration that, you know, we at InfoWars when, like, we're being called Israel shills. We're like, guys, what the hell's going? We're just going for the truth. You know, how do you feel about people like saying all this stuff about you?
Well, the timeline was really interesting because, you know, so he was killed 2 weeks ago on a Wednesday. I did a show about it that following Thursday, and my message on the show was very Christian. It was just like, let's not take up arms and pursue revenge. I said, let's try to be forgiving. Let's try to, you know, be intentional about what we do next. Let's try to focus on God and align our intentions with God and so on. I didn't even really talk too much about the forensic details of the assassination. I just talked about how we should all respond moving forward. I didn't do a show that Friday. The weekend went by, and by Sunday, people started to say, why is Nick Fuentes not talking about the Israel conspiracy? Why has he not said anything? Why is he avoiding it? Why is he covering it up? And I'm staying over here like, hold the phone, covering it up, avoiding it. First of all, it's been 4 days. Second of all, my experience with Charlie Kirk my entire life, he canceled me for being an anti-Semite. That's how I knew him from 2019 until 2 weeks ago. For a full 6 years, as I was banned from his organization, banned from his events. He called me a Jew hater last month, a demonic Jew hater. So when people started to say there's this Israel connection, my first reaction is that's ridiculous. He was their biggest advocate. He was their biggest ally. And I understand all these arguments about he was evolving. Your coverage was unbelievable, unbelievably prescient. The rumor you heard he was in fear for his life, or you heard it secondhand or whatever. Obviously, that has been so prescient, everything that's been discussed. But that was kind of my first reaction. The following day, that Monday, I came on, I did the show, and I addressed it, and I laid it all out. I discussed the Max Blumenthal piece, your coverage of it, every possible piece of evidence that might fit with an Israeli conspiracy. Then at the end, I said, I just don't think there's all that much there. I think these things coincided. In other words, it can be true that he was having second thoughts and maybe was defying the Israel lobby on some level, but also he was killed by some radical left-wing lunatic. Like, these things can both be true at the same time. I said, I'm unconvinced that they're related because I don't see the connection between them outside of a circumstantial connection. And people said, well, what are you defending Israel now? Now you're covering up. Now you're pivoting. And I said, wait a second. My views on all of this have not changed even slightly. I mean, I'm the same guy I was on September 9th as I was on September 10th. I didn't like Charlie Kirk then. I don't like him now. I thought he was an Israel shill then. I think he's an Israel shill now. I just don't buy it. And for that, I just get this avalanche, some of it synthetic, some of it inorganic, some of it real, people doubting my credentials now. And honestly, it's just made me furious. And I can kind of sympathize with what a lot of people say about you guys at InfoWars. And in fairness, I pushed back on that. I said, look, I think they just disagree. I don't think they're in the pocket of Israel, but just maybe they don't agree with us that much. I'm in the same position. It's like, I just don't agree. I'm not in the pocket. I just don't agree. So yeah, it's made me very sympathetic to you guys in that way.
Well, the whole thing has been weird because I had the same reaction. I saw all these people going, Nick is shilling for Israel. And so I went and I watched your show, and I'm having this weird experience of like cognitive dissonance where I'm like, am I watching the right episode? Because he's not chilling for Israel. But and so it was just this disconnect between what people were saying and what you were saying. And it was just baffling. And, you know, I think we're all experiencing, you know, some people say low IQ anti-Semitism, but there's this low IQ conspiracy theorizing now. I never go on TikTok. I went on TikTok yesterday because I saw somebody post something that was just crazy about Erica Kirk is a reptilian. I just thought, I'm just going to go down this rabbit hole for a minute, see what people are saying. And I felt like it seemed literally demonic to me because the people were just saying the craziest stuff that had no connection to reality whatsoever. And there's thousands of them. They all have 100,000 likes on every video. And I'm like, you got to have some ounce of intelligence. You got to have something real to stake your flag on. And then you can, you know, speculate. But what do we do about the low IQ conspiracy theorizing? Because they're all over the place and it's complete nonsense. A lot of it is complete and utter nonsense, whether it's about Israel or anything else. What the bottom has fallen out, it seems, and things are just insane on the, you know, the far conspiracy side. What do we do about this?
I think we got to press them. I don't think that they should be silenced. I don't think that they should be covered up. I think that they should be, we should look at their arguments and disassemble them, which is what I've done on my show. You know, I'm not going out there and saying it's impossible Israel was involved. I'm not saying that you don't have a right to believe that, or, you know, even that maybe Charlie Kirk was chafing with the Israel lobby. It's just show me the evidence. And where I focused in on this is on the evidence provided. And what's really interesting about that whole argument, I covered this on my show last night, it all stems from the piece by Max Blumenthal at the Gray Zone. And what I've pointed out is this is not a trustworthy guy to begin with. I don't care for this guy. I don't trust him. I know Alex had him on the show the other day, so I'm not going to talk too much trash, but suffice to say, I'm not his fan. And all of the speculation seems to proceed from this article, which is based on hearsay, where he reports that anonymous sources and close friends were making claims about a state of mind prior to the killing. And it centers around these two claims, one of which is that Netanyahu offered Charlie Kirk a bribe, and the second of which is this meeting with Bill Ackman. And those were kind of the two central claims. And over the past few weeks, you've seen that both of those things have completely blown up. Yesterday, Candace Owens and Max Blumenthal both said, well, we never claimed that Netanyahu offered a $150 million bribe. We never said that. Last week, Bill Ackman came out and spilled all the evidence about the meeting. And it turns out that Charlie Kirk arranged and organized that meeting. That was the basis of him feeling blackmailed and all these other things. And Blumenthal and Owens did not dispute any aspect of Bill Ackman's account of that story. So, you know, what do we do about the low IQ situation? For me, I just say, bring it on, bring it on. That's the answer. When people are saying nonsense like that, what we used to do, or what I should say the mainstream media did, what society did, is those people, including myself, would be censored. Right. Banned, censored, blacklisted, you're crazy, you're psycho, name-calling. For me, I would almost say I would like to debate one of those people. I'd love to talk to Ian Carroll, Candace Owens, Blumenthal, whoever. I would love to debate one of those people and put it to bed. You bring your facts, I'll bring my facts. Let's just talk about what's true and what's in reality. I don't want to, you know, I don't like conspiracy theories on the left when they say a Groiper killed Charlie Kirk. I don't like the psycho conspiracy stuff on the right when they say energy weapons are being shot from a trap door and there's 7,000 decoys. You know, I don't believe that either. So we have to just get to the bottom of it with honesty and you know, without being afraid for where that's going to lead.
Yeah, it feels very weird. I watch these videos on TikTok, and I'm like, is this how people think we are? Like, because we're completely in a different class. We just want to go for the truth. But then, of course, there's the issue of, okay, if there was some international, you know, involvement from Israel, I wouldn't trust our FBI to come out with that. And again, I'm in this weird position because Israel was never my – I didn't even think it was Israel. It didn't even enter my mind. We've seen so much violence on the left. We've seen the transgender shooters. That was where my mind went first. Until somebody posted my old tweet, like, hey, a month ago you said, Charlie, and I was like, oh, right, that did happen. And so I'm in this weird position where, like, my tweet sort of started the whole thing, but I've never been the biggest Israel did it guy, but I do think it's worth looking at. And I think it points to the bigger problem we have, that if it was Israel, we would never know because our government is so controlled by them. How does that play into your interpretation of what's going on?
Well, it goes without saying that you cannot trust the FBI. You cannot trust the DOJ. And why not? They just got done with another cover-up. How about Jeffrey Epstein, you know, who killed himself allegedly in his cell or was murdered because he was silenced by the people in his black book, his client list? That was literally covered up in July. We're in the middle of an active cover-up of the Epstein scandal. Pam Bondi came out and said, there are no other third parties we're investigating. There is no black book. There's no list. There's no sex trafficking ring. There is no other evidence even for us to give you. We were in the middle of that cover up. And remember, that comes from DOJ and FBI working together, burying that. Now we're supposed to believe, like you said, whatever happened that day, that they're going to be forthcoming about it. So the way that it factors in for me is we have to be skeptical about everything that we're hearing. We have to be skeptical about the FBI. We have to be skeptical about, in my opinion, people like Max Blumenthal. Blumenthal has ties to Russia. He has ties to Russian intelligence. He's a part of that whole Sputnik, Russia Today situation. He changed his mind on Syria after he had a meeting. You know, so I think that's him, or maybe I'm confusing him with somebody else. But, you know, people like Blumenthal, as well as the FBI, you have to scrutinize all the sources. And by the same token, maybe the FBI is not covering this up. I mean, to the extent that they are a law enforcement agency, I mean, maybe they're reporting on some things that are true. We have to parse and discern all the information that we're getting, and we have to use our common sense. Like, for example, Andrew Colvett, who's the PR guy for Turning Point USA, he comes out last week and says, well, this 30-06 bullet was stopped by Charlie Kirk's Superman bones, his man of steel, adamantium skeleton. It's like, Yeah, I don't trust that. You know, I mean, and it doesn't mean I don't trust anything that this guy says. I mean, maybe some of it's true, but that doesn't make any sense at all. And that's the kind of stuff you need to scrutinize and say, wait a minute, that doesn't add up. We're going to need corroborating evidence. If that's the case, show us the bullet, show us the autopsy, show us something that proves what you're saying. Because the way that sounds, when they start to use magical language like that and say, it's miraculous, that's where you lose me. And I'm glad that Kash Patel came out last week and said, look, there's all these questions. These are the questions. We're going to answer them. I like to hear that. That's a step in the right direction for transparency. But even when they deliver the verdict, we're going to need to scrutinize that as well and make sure that, you know, everything checks out. So the problem is you just can't trust anybody. You can't trust the FBI. You can't trust the internet. We're really kind of in the wilderness when it comes to that. Everybody kind of has to make up their own mind.
Yeah, it's not a good place to be in. But again, I put the blame squarely on these institutions that have lied to us so many times and participated in so many cover-ups. Of course, we're not going to trust them. Just like, of course, people are going to blame Israel when the week before they're bombing the, you know, Hamas negotiators and bragging about it. It's like, all right, if you don't want people blaming you for assassinations, you should probably stop killing so many people. I mean, it's really not that complicated, but it is difficult to figure out where the hell we're supposed to go from here. And I've got people, you know, online now, multiple people saying I am now a propaganda shill for the deep state because I use the term leftist violence. And it's like, what else am I supposed to call it? Like, I don't even understand what we're doing anymore. If we can't say leftist violence when you've got leftist people committing violence against ICE facilities, like, what are we supposed to call it at this point? So, yeah, it really feels like we're in this very strange situation where I don't know who to trust, and everything is both true and untrue at the same time. And pursuing the truth is really just increasingly difficult in any direction. So I guess, you know, topic of like leftist violence and the ICE shooting that we saw earlier today, what do you think the solution to this is? I keep getting called the deep state shill because I'm like, hey, the federal government needs to intervene. But that's only because I don't want us to have to do it. I want to avoid the civil war that they're clearly planning. What is the solution to this?
I do believe it's a law enforcement solution. And you know, people use the slippery slope argument. They say, so you're saying Palantir should take over the world or something? It's like, I think there are actions in between what we have going on now, which is just like a kill zone. I mean, let's be honest. They shot at Trump. Another guy came and tried to kill him at Mar-a-Lago. Luigi Mangione shot the guy in the back of the head. You had three school shootings, which credibly could be, say, are connected to some kind of internet cell in Wisconsin, Tennessee, Minnesota, even in Colorado, the day Charlie Kirk was killed. I guess that was number four. The terrorist attacks against ICE, like, we have a problem here. It's not being detected. It's not being intercepted. And there's got to be a solution between let these people just kill everybody and Palantir takes away all our rights. And I think where you start is this stuff is on the internet. When you see the school shootings, the terrorist attacks, how about Tyler Robinson, for instance? He was on Discord, apparently confessing, planning, other people knew in advance. Don't you think the FBI should look at that? Don't you think the FBI should look at that server, group chat, you know, whatever form it took? Shouldn't the FBI be looking at that and seeing if there's accomplices, third parties? And shouldn't they then be looking at those left-wing networks? If there is organized left-wing violence, if it's being planned on forums or encouraged, it might even be encouraged by foreign intelligence. You know, when I look at some of these like satanic groups on forums, for example, that shooter in Minnesota, that transgender shooter, he was writing his entire diary in Cyrillic. He was writing it in the Russian alphabet. And that's something that you see crop up with that cell. It's like international. There's like an international element. Whatever it is, whether it's homegrown left wing or there's some kind of international backing, I think you got to bring the government in and take a look at some of that stuff. So wherever that's being funded, sponsored, planned, encouraged, there needs to be some kind of law enforcement response, because the alternative, like you said, it's civil war. That's what they're egging on here.
Yeah, and it seems like in a lot of ways, we on the right, I mean, for a long time, I've moved sort of away from pure libertarianism as people, you know, perceive it. I still consider myself a libertarian just because liberty, anyway, we don't need to get into it. But it feels like a trick now. Now I look back and I go, man, this whole idea of like we can't use the government, but they can, that's such an obvious trap that we're stuck in. And it seems like that's almost evolved now to where a lot of people on the right are just terrified of using the government for anything, which is especially absurd when they're like, well, they're just opening up the door for the government to do that to us. And it's like they've been doing it to us for 4 years. Well, what are you talking about? I mean, they've been throwing people in jail. They throw friends of mine in jail for 20 years when they weren't even at the Capitol. They got a text message. So I still have that same instinct where I'm like, I don't want the government, you know, going out there arresting people because they claim they're anti. How do we prevent it from going too far? And what is your response to people who are still have that sort of hesitation of using the government to do anything ever?
Well, I guess the political dilemma is that the right wing is who is in charge, but the right wing is controlled by Israel. You know, the Republican Party is controlled by Israel. The DOJ, the FBI are totally infiltrated by Israel. And so the reason that people have this trepidation about we want to use government is because, well, who is government? The government is infiltrated. So if we are using government, it's not really us, right? It's them. And if they have that power, I mean, they'll use it against the left. They'll use it against us. They'll use it against the Israel critical element on the right. At the same time, the left is real and the left is violent and the left doesn't discriminate. They saw Charlie Kirk as a Nazi. They think Ben Shapiro's a Nazi. They think Nazis are bad. They think anyone that criticizes Israel for the wrong reasons is bad. Hassan Piker, he hates Israel. He also hates me because he thinks I'm a quote unquote real Nazi. So it's like, to get protected from the violent left, you need to gang up with the Israel controlled right. If you don't, then you're going to be victimized by the Nazi-hating, white people-hating left. And so that's the dilemma. There's no good options here. And on some level, we also don't really have any control either. So the question is, what is to be done from our side? I mean, I don't know how much of what we do is going to change it one way or the other. People say that we shouldn't be cheering for it because then it might be used against us. I would say the more immediate threat, though, is that you got 30% of Generation Z liberals that think they could shoot right-wing people. As long as that's us, I think those people got to be arrested. So on this one, I think I come down on the side of more law enforcement for now.
I think I do, too. And again, it's just like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. I want to get into the Hassan Piker stuff on the other side, too, because that's an interesting tangled web. Nick Fuentes is my guest, and I just want to thank Nick for staying on with us for a full hour. So you already did 2 hours with Alex Jones, so big thanks for spending so much time with us. You know, I'm looking forward to having you on more, because now I have a show that airs while you're awake, so that's very, very exciting, and now I get to join the Night Owl time frame. And actually, I was thinking about, I think like 5 years ago, I first had you on American Journal, and I asked you about how it felt to experience your meteoric rise. And now it feels like you're going through another sort of series of explosive awareness throughout America. I got my dad sending me Nick Fuentes clips. He's like, I see nothing but Nick Fuentes on TikTok. He loves TikTok, and you're all over it, apparently. And you just did Patrick Bet David. That is a huge one. Obviously, he's getting tons of views. How do you feel about people are saying you're going mainstream, not in a bad way, but like everybody's aware who you are now. And a lot of times you're sort of setting the talking points for a huge swath of America. How do you feel about this in the last few months, the explosion of the growth of awareness about you?
It's been pretty exciting and it's been surprising. You know, you kind of know the whole story, and I've known you guys at InfoWars forever. And for most of my career, people wouldn't touch me with a 10-foot pole. I was completely radioactive and suppressed and blacklisted. And, you know, for a time, you couldn't find me on the internet anywhere. I mean, my stuff was so banned and suppressed. I wasn't on Twitter. There was no Rumble at that time. I was banned on all the mainstream stuff. And so to see it kind of reaching this level of saturation, it's almost hard to believe. It almost feels like I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop. You know, maybe right. I'm a little cynical in that way, but it's been pretty great. I've been very pleased about it. I've been happy.
Oh, I've been loving seeing it. Honestly, it's about damn time, because what you've always said is always it's been the same the entire time. People think that you change your message or anything. Have you changed your message at all? I mean, as you sort of are getting more awareness, are you tempted to sort of change your tactics, or are you just like, hey, this works, I'm going to keep doing it? Any thought about that?
The only thing I would change is just cleaning up the language. I have such a foul mouth on my show. I mean, the swear words, and not even the racial slurs. I know Patrick Bet-David gave me a really hard time about my use of a certain racial slur, kind of the most famous one. And it's not even just that, but just, you know, now that I'm entering the mainstream, I said it the other week when Charlie Kirk died, I do feel a bit of a responsibility now to kind of put my best foot forward, so to speak, and really bring people the most sophisticated, the most advanced show, and not really do kind of the self-indulgent, sloppy stuff. But I mean, look, the reason that people like The Message is because it's raw. It's raw. It's honest. It's the truth. The reason people love the clips, the reason people love the show is because they're just not getting that message on the mainstream stuff. They're getting it maybe from independent media. I know you talk about a lot of the same stuff. Alex does too. You know, many people on this side of the internet do. But in the mainstream, you're not getting an honest take on Israel. You're just not. You're not getting an honest take about Judaism, for that matter. You're not getting an honest take about race, immigration, black and white crime. And so the reason people love the show, it's not just that it's super honest, but they also like that it's no pretense. It's not overly produced. It's not overly manicured. It's just raw. It's funny. It's shocking. And so, you know, I would push back on some of the criticism. A lot of people lately have been giving me all this advice. Candace Owens told me I internet too hard, whatever that means. It's like interneting is what got me to this point. Interneting is why everyone under the age of 30 does not support Israel anymore. Interneting is what is causing this mass awakening. So, you know, that's what a lot of people do, is they start to get mainstream success and they change the ingredients. You know, they change the secret formula. I'm not really looking to change the secret formula. I want to polish it up. I want to clean it up. I want to, you know, get it more professional. But other than that, I'm sticking with the original recipe. You know, I'm sticking with the original spices and herbs, so yeah, to speak.
It works well. I mean, one of the hardest things about doing this show is that we're on the radio, so I can't curse. And it's like such a limiting. I mean, I would be cursing like a sailor just from the stuff we have to talk about. It really makes you want to curse quite a bit. When you talk about, so there seems to be this massive opportunity that we're missing, which is that so many people on both sides of the aisle are against Israel and want, if nothing else, America to have freedom of action outside of the concerns of our supposed ally in the Middle East. And yet it's like, wow, can't we come together? Like, you guys don't like what's happening. We don't like what's happening. And then you look over there and they're all, you know, saying, hey, let's kill all white men. And you go, oh, right. No, we can't unify with these people. They hate everything that we represent. It's like, can't we all be America first? Oh, no, they think that means you're a Nazi. So it's like, is there any hope for outreach to the left? I think you mentioned, I think it was on the Thursday or Friday show after the assassination, where you said you were like, you know, you had some outreach to people like Hassan Piker, or people on the left who at least you align on Israel. Hey, maybe we could do something together here. And, you know, what was the response to that? Or, you know, what's been your strategic thinking in regards to the left being also anti-Israel?
The left has totally rejected and repudiated that. You know, I've gone viral on TikTok for criticizing Israel, and all the comments will say, I'm left wing. I can't believe I'm agreeing with Nick Fuentes. I can't believe a broken clock is right twice a day, and so on. And I thought over the summer, maybe naively, that could be the basis for sort of a transcendent movement that brings together maybe people from the right and the left.
Right.
But after the Charlie Kirk shooting, and even right around that time, that whole advance has been totally rejected by people like Hassan Piker and others who have said, well, it's really a big trick. He says he's against Israel, but he's not really, or he is against Israel for the wrong reasons, and he's only trying to appeal to you cynically. And so I think when it comes to the far left, when it comes to the communists, there can be no truce. There's no middle ground. And I think, I know this is a lesson I learned early on, forgot, and I'm now learning all over again. You know, for the past couple of years, we've been really going in on the war in Gaza, and it's easy to forget the left, even the Muslims, they have different goals than we do. We might have certain things in common, like we're against what's happening over there, but maybe that's the beginning and end of it, because the far left, you know, even to the extent that you've got Muslims outside of America, inside of America that feel the same way, they got a very different vision for America. And so, you know, we got to be very clear. We got to take our own side, and what our own side is, It's right wing, it's Christian, it's pro-white, and it's critical of Israel. It has to be all those things. It can't not have any one of those things. So I got some clarity on that, I guess.
Yeah, I guess fundamentally we approach it from different perspectives. And I think you've talked a little bit about this, the communists who hate Israel. And it seems to me like they're right about Israel for the same reason they're wrong about just about everything else. They see the whole world between just like the white oppressors and the poor brown people. And so they apply that to Israel and they happen to land on the right side of that conflict. But, you know, I approach it from a Christian perspective and even a nationalistic perspective that these people, you know, deserve to have a say over their destiny in this piece of land. And I feel like it's the same reasoning I have for why I don't like the Muslim takeover of the UK. It's like, if you're on opposite sides when it comes to immigration to UK and what's happening to Palestine, it's like, all right, you've got a different set of priorities than I do. And it's disappointing because it seems like there is such an overwhelming majority of people in America who are sick of the status quo, but we cannot move forward because of this divide. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to bring us together or if it's ever even possible. I'm worried about a false flag. I know you're worried about, you know, war with Iran. And as I play it out in my head, I'm like, whatever the false flag is that's coming that I think we all feel in our bones, it's going to have to be huge. It's not going to be a single assassination. I think it's going to have to be something so overwhelming and traumatic on a nationwide scale that, like, we all revert to just like, trust the authorities. I just need to hear what to do at this point. What do you think is coming next in terms of World War III, the Iran-Israel conflict, Russia, Ukraine? Do you think a false flag's in the future, a real attack? What do you think's next?
I think it's very possible. And I've said that from the beginning, because, of course, that is what Israel's been driving at from the start, is they want to decapitate Iran. And first, they want to denuclearize Iran. And to do both of those things, they need the United States involved. Right. But the United States has no appetite to get involved. Well, how are they going to remedy that? Well, they'll come up with a reason for us to get involved, which will be something like a 9/11, a new Pearl Harbor, a new 9/11. That's sort of just like the obvious logical way to work it out. And that's why I thought it was likely. And if you've been following it just this past week, the snapback sanctions were triggered against Iran at the end of August. They're going into effect next week at the end of September. There was a preliminary deal between the IAEA and Iran to bring inspectors back into Iran to look at their damaged nuclear facilities and disclose the location of the enriched uranium. That deal was agreed upon by the Iranian government last week. Well, even though Iran agreed to bring the inspectors back, the sanctions are still going into effect as scheduled, according to a meeting of the Security Council last week. So in other words, the Europeans reneged on the deal. The Europeans said, if you let the inspectors come back, if you reengage with the IAEA, then we will release the sanctions. But they're not holding it up. Iran took the inspectors. They're keeping the sanctions on board anyway. So this week, Iran says, forget about it. No inspectors are coming in. That's not going to happen. And then today, Grossi, who's the head of the IAEA, came out and said, Iran is enriching to 90% right. Weapons-grade uranium, highly enriched uranium. They're going to build a bomb. And so there was a piece in Foreign Policy magazine a couple months ago. It said the timeline is that there's going to be a second Iran war before the end of this year. It's going to happen in the fall. It's going to be surrounding the snapback sanctions debate. And the reason it's going to happen then also is because Israel does not want Iran to rearm.
Right.
In the time between the war in June and the end of this year, Iran can, if they wanted to, enrich to 90%, maybe build a primitive nuclear device. They could rearm their air defenses and other defenses. They're bringing in advanced systems from Russia, fighter jets and air defense, anti-aircraft guns. And so Israel wants to prevent that. So I think that the timeline we're talking about is before the end of the year, we might be looking at, who knows, a dirty bomb, you know, some kind of significant false flag. And if not that, it might just be a second phase of the war in June to continue to degrade Iran's infrastructure, their military equipment. But make no mistake about it. I mean, the driving force of Israel is to bring down Iran. They're going to do it with us. And there's only one way to bring us in. And that's at some point, they're going to try and trigger something with a catastrophe on our soil. I think that's where it's headed.
I think so, too. I think it's the only way forward. So I'm almost like trying to preempt being like the Israeli false flags coming, just almost like Alex was doing before 9/11, going, hey, call the White House and tell them if you try to blow up the World Trade Center with Osama bin Laden, we know it's really you. Just to almost, you know, hopefully get into their calculus. Ah, gee, we might not get away with this. Maybe we should try something else, because obviously Israel wants to destroy Iran, and you know, you're one of the best at like articulating what actually the plan is on how they need to get rid of this regional power so they can be a regional superpower. Then they won't need America anymore. They need America. They need American boots on the ground to defeat Iran, just as a matter of mathematics. They cannot do it themselves. They're desperate to bring that about. I want to know if you what you think about this interpretation of Trump's willingness to go along with everything Israel is doing, because it seems to me maybe the same thing that happened with him in Ukraine, where it's almost like these forces are going ahead already. Israel's going to bomb Iran. Israel's going to bomb the Hamas negotiators in Qatar. That makes Trump look weak if he wants them to stop and they do it anyway. So he just goes, oh, that was my idea. Actually, I'm not weak. I wasn't fooled by our allies. That was my idea. I told him to do that. And it's like, what a bizarre strategy. But that's what it seems like he's doing. It seems like he's doing with Ukraine, too. They signed all these agreements to guarantee weapon shipments. They're going to try to start a war with Russia. And he's like, well, I don't want to look like an idiot, so I'll say it was my idea. What do you think the likelihood is that that's what's motivating him?
I think that's always what it is. I think that Israel acts and the White House reacts. Israel bombs Iran, then they tell the White House. Israel bombs Qatar, then they tell the White House. And then the White House is picking up the pieces. And you're exactly right. I mean, their attack on Qatar, which happened the day before Charlie Kirk was killed, which is sort of interesting timing. This is something that obviously the United States would be opposed to. We have our largest base in the region in Qatar. They are mediating the war in Gaza, the war in Iran, all of this stuff. We have deep ties. Trump visited that country. So it's obviously something he didn't want. And if Israel bombs them from the Red Sea, then that means that either the United States didn't know about it, and therefore, like you said, he's weak and can't control them. He's not in control of the situation. Or he's going to have to reprimand Israel or take control of it in some way. So he sort of takes this middle path where he says, yeah, you know, we knew about it and we don't love it. And then he goes and plants a story in the Washington Post and says that he's furious with Netanyahu. He's really unhappy. So they got him between a rock and a hard place. And it's hard to discern what his real mentality is because there's so much deception. You know, when right. The Iran war kicked off in June, they made it seem like he knew about it the whole time. And basically he was stringing the Iranians along and tricking them so that they would be vulnerable and Israel could catch them with their guard down. We don't even know. That might have been face saving. So we just don't know. It seems that he lies. He lies to Iran. He lies to the public. So it's impossible to say what he really feels on this. But what is clear is he cannot restrain them. He is unwilling or unable to restrain them. And for that reason, it doesn't really make a difference what his mindset is, because the result is the same.
Yeah, it really is just pathetic. And I don't know if you've seen it. You may have been on air when it broke, or it may have come out earlier. Tucker Carlson giving an interview to Glenn Greenwald and saying he has, you know, firsthand knowledge that Netanyahu's going around bragging that he controls America. And it's like, Trump is such a prideful guy. Does that not hurt him? Like, is he not willing to stand up just because he's being made to look like such a fool on the world stage? And of course, we know that Iran has to be the ultimate goal. And I feel like Israel has invested so much. They really did a gamble here. They've behaved so abominably. If this doesn't end in the, you know, defenestration of the Ayatollah, if this doesn't end in a total destruction of Iran, they're going to be in a lot of trouble, because Iran's still there and everybody else hates them. So like they have to have this end with Iran. It seems like they're in this, they've gambled too much. It's a sunk cost fallacy at this point, and it seems like they're willing to do anything. Again, as you play it out in your head, what is the future of Israel with all of these? All of Europe is turning against them, apparently. Again, I don't even know what to trust anymore, but apparently they're recognizing a Palestinian state. The EU is cutting off weapons transfers. If America turns away from them, they have no allies. Like, what is the future of Israel with the trajectory that we're currently on?
Well, it's all in flux right now, and it's the biggest gamble. Netanyahu is gambling the fate of Israel on this, because, like you said, this whole process has turned the entire world against them in a way that it never was. The entire world is united against Israel, including Europe, including most of the public in the United States, certainly the entire left, most of the young, increasingly significant proportions of the right wing, too. And if they're not successful, by the way, they've also turned all the Muslim countries against them, too.
Right.
You've got Iran working with Egypt. You've got Egypt building up their security in the Sinai. You've got Iran having a rapprochement with Saudi Arabia. They're all getting together at the Arab League and the OIC last week to put out this joint statement. So if they're not successful, it sounds like they're screwed. They don't have America in 10, 20 years. They don't have Europe. The whole Muslim world is against them. So it's basically win or catastrophe. They either topple Iran, they force Syria, Lebanon, Iran into the Abraham Accords. They become unimaginably wealthy and they become their own global power, or it could be like an unprecedented setback for that country in a way that they've really never experienced. They've been around for 80 years and it's only been up and up for them in many ways, in broad strokes. So I think it's just going to be fought out, and it's going to come down to, are they able to decapitate Iran? Because if they are, then there is no meaningful opposition in the Middle East, maybe from Turkey, maybe from Egypt. But I mean, really, it's Iran that is built like a fortress to withstand the storm like this. So it's all going to come down to that, and whether the United States is going to get involved and how successful this conflict will be. And of course, that river runs right through the war with Russia, the war with China, the war with Venezuela. So, I mean, it's not, I don't think, an exaggeration or alarmism to say we're on the precipice here. Like we're staring down the cliff right now. And it's pretty freaky. I'm not going to lie. I don't know what's on the other side of it.
Well, and it's weird, too, because it's almost like we've been warning them about this since, you know, late October 2023. Right. We saw the way they were bombing hospitals and stuff. And even from the beginning, it was like, y'all, you can't do this. You can't just bomb, you know, innocent people forever. And we got called anti-Semite and all this other stuff. But in reality, they have really made their bed. Now they're having to lie in it. And it's very disturbing when you think about, you know, where this goes. It's almost like, man, they probably should have listened to the so-called anti-Semites when we were telling them, hey, this is not a good look, y'all, for lack of a better term. But they pursue it relentlessly. And it is this weird thing where you've got Israel and you've got NATO both trying desperately to start a war with a power that they cannot defeat without America. And thank God Trump at least seems like he's, you know, trying to avoid full-fledged war with these two forces. But he's sort of capitulated on Ukraine, apparently. I mean, everything is so, you know, topsy-turvy. But, I mean, what do you think the strategy is here, trying to get America into these two wars that we don't want to be in, that the American people definitely don't want to be in? I don't know if they can, you know, blackmail enough pedophile congressmen to get the wars going that they really want. So, I mean, why are they acting like this? I guess my question, why are they trying to start fights that they cannot win, especially when they can't rely on their ally America?
Well, I think they're both different in their own way. I think that, of course, Europe is terrified of Russia. Russia is testing. They're testing and they're pushing forcefully against the periphery of the American empire. That's what NATO is. NATO is part of the American empire. And NATO is trying to expand its borders into Ukraine. Russia's pushing back on that. NATO is worried that Russia won't stop there, that they're going to keep pushing on the Baltic states, on Poland, and eventually they're going to come for Europe. And they're right. They're right to believe that because Europe cannot defend itself against Russia. Right. Europe does not have the industrial capacity, does not have the military for that. They just don't have the arms or the personnel, the readiness. They're just not prepared for that. And so Europe is worried about its security. They're so caught up in Ukraine because they say Ukraine is sort of like the first domino. If Ukraine goes, and they're all going to go, and they know they can't fight. So they want the United States to guarantee Ukraine's security, and in doing so, guarantee their security in the future. Now, the United States is having difficulty doing that because we are spread way too thin. Right. They just reported that the United States is not giving out any more Patriot missile defense systems because we're out of them.
Right.
And think about that. Missile defense is fundamental in the conflict in Ukraine, in the conflict in Israel, in the conflict in Taiwan. We're out of those systems and we're not making enough of them. Russia makes enough artillery, drones, ammunition, you name it. They're a war machine. We can't make the systems. We're spread too thin. So we can give Ukraine those kinds of security guarantees. That's why we've been begging NATO for the past 10 years, spend more money on your military, because the balance of power is changing. And so what is happening all across the world is this world historical turning, going from this unipolar moment to a multipolar moment. Russia is testing the boundaries of American empire. China is testing the boundaries of American empire. Israel, in some sense, is acting as a freelancer. They, as a middle power, they're sort of freelancing and they're pursuing opportunities while America's weak, while also expecting that we're going to join in on their side. So they're a little bit unique in their own way. But I guess suffice to say, why are Israel and Russia, Europe and China, why are these countries acting in this way? It's because the world order, as we know it, is destabilizing. Mm-hmm. And that is because America is decreasing in relative terms, and China and Russia are increasing in relative terms, such that now the United States, with NATO, Japan, the Quad, whatever, they're coming into parity with China, Russia, and its allies. And so we're really getting into kind of like a bimodal or bipolar system of BRICS versus the U.S. and its alliances, and the former is challenging the latter, and they're challenging it everywhere it is. The whole world has turned into a chessboard, a battlefield where these forces are expressing themselves. And so I think, you know, what's on the other side of it, it's literally a world war. We're already in one.
Right.
In Latin America, in Western Africa, in the Middle East, in even the Baltics and Eastern Europe, in South Asia, East Asia, everywhere you look, it's a march towards war. So that's where it's headed.
It seems like that. And it seems like the people in power, even here in this country, are doing everything they can to push that forward. Again, why you would want to drive Russia into the hands of China, if China is this big existential threat and Russia is, for all intents and purposes, a European white nation, Christian, why would... It makes no sense unless you think of it as, okay, it's not people acting in America's interest. It's people who sort of have determined that America has served its purpose and now has to sort of be destroyed so the center of power can move away and more towards these. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for staying with us for so long. Follow Nick on X at Nick J. Fuentes, NicholasJFuentes.com, and of course, America First on Rumble. Thank you so much for being with us, Nick.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. We'll do it again soon. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. We have a lot of breaking news to get to, including a new video from Project Veritas. We'll go to that in the next segment, and we'll watch as much as we need to get the full story. But we'll go to that in just a second. We do have some breaking news here. It actually broke just before the show went live. But, of course, Nick had been on with Alex for 2 hours. We didn't want to have him come on again. Usually we have a guest later on. We try to hit the breaking news. We're going to do that now. The breaking news is former FBI Director James Comey expected to be indicted soon, according to MSNBC. And in fact, more people are expecting indictments to come down on them, including Letitia James. That is the latest that we've heard. And of course, Alex has been telling you this, if you've been paying attention. The grand juries are real. The indictments are being delivered. And it seems like something has lit a fire under the Republicans to actually do something for once. And I'm glad that people aren't being satisfied with the with words any longer. We're sick of hearing strongly worded letters. Let's go to a brief news report, clip 44 here. Former FBI Director James Comey expected to be indicted in just the next few days. Let's watch.
Multiple sources familiar are telling them that former FBI Director James Comey is expected to be indicted within coming days. They say this is a fluid situation, but that is the current expectation, is that an indictment would come out of the Eastern District of Virginia, potentially on allegations of lying to Congress back in 2020 in testimony up on Capitol Hill. Now, you'll remember, Scott, that the Eastern District of Virginia is where President Trump recently forced out a prosecutor who he argued was not moving fast enough to move ahead with charges against some of the people that President Trump views as his political enemies. You saw over the weekend the president posting on social media urging his attorney general, Pam Bondi, to proceed with cases against James Comey and others. The president tweeting over the weekend, or posting over the weekend, I should say, Pam, I have reviewed over 30 statements and posts saying that essentially same old story, no talk, all talk, no action, nothing is being done. What about Comey, Adam Schiff, Letitia? They're all guilty as hell, but nothing is going to be done. So the president urging his attorney general to move forward with cases against those folks. Now this new reporting from MSNBC suggesting that Comey, anyway, is expected to be indicted in the coming days. But, of course, cautioning this is a fluid situation and that could change. But that is the reporting as of right now. Scott, back.
So there's the reporting. And, of course, they have to frame it as Trump going after his political enemies. No, he's going after people who broke the law. Unlike them, Letitia James herself got elected campaigning by saying, I'm going to go after Donald Trump and find something to put him away on, and then just completely fabricated utter BS, going after a loan that I believe he'd already paid off, but that the bank had no complaints about. And it's almost like, do people understand this? The difference, the dichotomy or the space between people who are informed and not informed, I don't really know how to bridge this gap. So I was talking to a friend of mine that's fairly well-informed. I mean, he keeps up on the news. He listens to podcasts, that sort of stuff. But then I'm having to go through all the details of, like, do you have any idea what they tried to do to Trump? The way that they, the manipulation they did to all of these various laws, changing a misdemeanor to a felony and then, deciding that the statute of limitations didn't matter. And actually, even though the bank said that it was fine that this happened, they decided that it wasn't. And the fact that Letitia James was elected by saying, I'm going to go after Donald Trump. Like, there are so many things fundamentally broken. And it's almost like you have years to catch up if you don't realize this already. But obviously, this has absolutely nothing to do with Trump pursuing personal vengeance in any way. It's people who have literally broken the law over and over and over again. We absolutely know who they are and what laws they broke. Hell, I'd still go after Hillary Clinton. Remember, it was James Comey that came out and gave the big statement saying, yes, she broke the law. No, we're not going to prosecute. Well, why not? Well, why not? And are you investigating that? I mean, it's good to see movement. Until we see these people behind bars, until we see their mugshots, just like we saw Trump's, I'm not going to be satisfied. We have to keep pushing. We'll bring you more updates to this on the other side. Quick commercial break, 90 seconds. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere. The word on the streets, the speculation being bandied about, is that James Comey will soon be indicted for lying to Congress, perhaps amongst other charges. Now, there's an interesting deadline to this that they may have been relying on, the bad guys may have been relying on. So this is from NBC. The full extent of the charges being prepared against Comey is unclear, but the sources believe that at least one element of the indictment, if it goes forward, will accuse him of lying to Congress during his testimony on September 30th, 2020, about whether he authorized a leak of information. The reporter noted that the five-year statute of limitations on that charge would lapse next Tuesday. So if these indictments aren't filed by next Tuesday, that's the statute of limitations for lying to Congress, and there's no justice in the future. So maybe that's one of the reasons why they're really trying to get this, under the wire, get it done now while they can. Should have been done a long time ago. Of course, James Comey, like a month ago, was posting things on Instagram, 8647, a death threat to Donald Trump. I mean, this guy is evil. He is a swamp creature of the most fetid area of the swamp out there. And again, I mean, you just think about Peter Strzok and just all of Jack Smith and just the insane amount of corruption that was leveled to Donald Trump. And none of them have been to prison. None of them gone to prison. Apparently, Peter Strzok just lost he was suing the federal government for wrongful termination. And that's how confident these people are. Not only are they not sorry for totally abusing their power, getting caught red-handed, talking about an insurance policy to stop Trump from becoming president. They aren't like ashamed. They aren't like embarrassed that they were caught. They then sue the government, doubling down on everything that they said. And it's like, just throw these people in jail. Like, what, you know, is America going to be severely damaged by not having Peter Strzok there? Like, these people don't do anything for us. They're traitors. They need to be in prison. So this is a good step in that direction. But like, where is the urgency? And hopefully Trump is sincerely that upset at how slowly this is going. But we have so many things to worry about right now. It's almost like I just picture, I don't know, there's just the scene, you know, the scenes of, you know, the martyr of a saint where there's just like 15 spears sticking in him. Like we're being killed by our, you know, alliance with Israel, just dragging us down to hell, making everybody hate us and just totally taking our eye off the prize and stopping us from actually dealing with some of the other problems, which include things like rampant, out of control leftist violence across the country over and over and over again. We have experienced this even in just the last week or so. It just a truly astonishing number amount of violence coming out from the left. We got to deal with that. But we also got to deal with the deep state that, again, has stopped us from going after these people. I mean, we have so much justice to claim from these people, and we really haven't seen anything so far. We're, what, 9 months in almost to Trump's administration? Nobody's been arrested. Think about where we were this time period under Biden's administration. There'd been 1,000 arrests for January 6th for people that weren't even there, but were in text messages with people who knew people who were there. I mean, you're telling me that you can't get text messages from Antifa members that were, you know, in contact with the people that staged the ambush on the ICE facility a month ago? What about the one that happened earlier today? What about all of the insanity that the left is contributing to? And actually, there's a bit of a long post by Matt Walsh, and I try to avoid reading these like long posts other people write, but I really can't say it better myself, and it's like he is you know, getting dictation from my inner thoughts. So I want to read this out, because I think he just puts it so well, and it really sums up the argument in a brilliant way. So this is from Matt Walsh at Matt Walsh Blog. He says, imagine that we have a Democrat administration. Now imagine that a right-wing radical shot and killed one of the most influential liberals in the country on live TV. Now imagine that thousands of other conservatives shamelessly celebrated that assassination and called for more of them. Now imagine that in the same week, another right-winger shot up a country club while shouting MAGA, and another one shot up a news station and left behind a manifesto complaining about liberal bias in the media. Now imagine that a week after all these attacks, a conservative sniper perched on a rooftop fired into a Planned Parenthood clinic, killing or injuring multiple people. And imagine that Planned Parenthood attack was just the latest in a string of them stretching back several months. Is there any doubt how the Democrats would respond? Is there any doubt that they would wage a full-scale war on conservatives and have people like me frog marched in front of the camera in handcuffs and leg irons? Is there any doubt that they would declare martial law and label all right-wing expression incitement? Is there any doubt that there would be rounding up conservatives by the busload and shipping us to Gitmo? Is there any doubt that they would have Fox News and every other conservative media company shut down and its executives arrested or sued into bankruptcy? I'm not even advocating for Republicans to do all that Democrats would do if the roles were reversed. Like, I believe in the rule of law. I know they would throw the rules out, chuck the Constitution into a wood chipper, and ruthlessly prosecute us all if conservatives engaged in the kind of systematic campaign of political terrorism that the left is currently conducting. I don't want anyone persecuted. What I do want, what we all want, is for the Trump administration to do absolutely everything legally in its power to prosecute and punish every leftist responsible for committing, coordinating, funding, or inciting this epidemic of political violence. I want them to actually treat Antifa like the terrorist organization that it is and handle its adherents and affiliates in the same way we would handle ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Now is the time. Lives hang in the balance. Crush the terrorist. Do it now. I mean, my God. My God, have you seen some of the attacks on the Portland ICE facility that Katie Davis, Davis Court, I think her name is? She's one of the, I believe she's one of the post-millennial people. I know she works with Andy Ngo quite a bit. And she's been filming this raid on a federal facility that happened after Antifa was declared domestic terrorist. And they're out there throwing fireworks, attacking people. I got video after video of violence being committed against reporters or anybody standing nearby. I mean, it's ridiculous how these people have been able to just completely run roughshod over law enforcement in this country. And, you know, one or two of them get arrested eventually, but it went on for hours. These people locking, you know, and what they did during George Floyd was they would like lock the, put chains around the doors and try to set the building on fire. I mean, these are radical, violent terrorists. why are they not treated as such? It genuinely doesn't make any sense. And it's especially concerning because they're really staging much bigger operations that are formulating and fomenting in the background, out of sight. Okay, we've talked about this quite a bit, how the Tesla protests and a lot of the big protests since his second administration began have been a bunch of geriatric people, a bunch of old people, a bunch of boomers standing around waving signs. And we explained to you that's not because the youth doesn't care. It's not because the youth just doesn't want to, you know, go out to protest anymore. It's because they are being radicalized. And from Joe Biden's campaign to Kamala Harris, they have decided that the American system is too corrupt. The Democratic Party, you know, will never work for them. So they're not worried about protesting and voting and convincing people anymore. They're moving to direct action. And we've been reporting on this the entire time because it's been a noticeable phenomenon that you don't have the same level of protest out there. Remember the first time Trump got elected, it was the pink hair women's march every weekend. I mean, they were out there in force constantly. And I think after 8 years of that, getting Kamala Harris and Joe Biden in return for all of your activism, the far left has decided, no, that's not worth it. We're not protesting anymore. We're going to move to direct action. And we actually know what their plans are, and they're sort of advertising them everywhere. And we have to take this seriously, and we have to treat this with the intensity it deserves in terms of understanding truly that the left is trying to do in America what they have successfully done all over the world, which is start a color revolution, which is just a modern manifestation of communist revolutions from 100 years ago. It's the same tactics. It's the same methods that they're using. And they're doing it in the open because it doesn't seem like anybody in power is aware of what they're doing or motivated to stop them, which again is extremely disturbing. And I've got some videos to illustrate this, because we don't just know what they're planning on doing. We know the exact day they're planning to launch this attack. It's May Day 2028. And I'll explain exactly why in just a minute. Let's go to clip 35 here. This is, I believe her name is Carolyn Boroshenko. I think her last name is Boroshenko. And I'll get her exact Twitter account, because she's been on this, you know, very well. And we're going to have to get her on to have a discussion about this. Clip 35 here. This is, again, the far left planning in the open to stage a genuine, full-fledged communist revolution in 2028. Just watch.
I'm Carolyn Boroshenko. I'm an analyst and independent journalist covering the far left in America, and I'm about to tell you about the most terrifying thing the far left is doing that you don't know about yet. For the last 3 weeks, I've been attending SALT training with the Democratic Socialists of America. The idea of SALTing is the concept that socialists who want to control the unions will get their members jobs in strategic organizations like Amazon, like Starbucks, like groceries, like airlines, like automotive, like education. They will get their socialist friends jobs in these industries specifically with the purpose of them agitating to form unions and to get more workers into the unions within those organizations. And what attending these trainings has taught me is that the Democratic Socialists of America, through their labor caucus right here, they have a massive network of jobs all over the country where socialists are sitting in jobs in these organizations, and they hire their socialist friends, and then they put them through training, they put them through mentorship. They're not there to do a job. They don't really care about the job. They are there to organize to form unions. So why is this important? There is a strategy on the left called May Day 2028. This is led primarily by the UAW, the United Auto Workers. But what this is the idea of a mass general strike. Essentially, the far left is trying to organize across all the labor unions, but with a really strategic focus on specific types of unions, because they want all the workers across all the unions to strike at the same time, May Day 2028, May 1st, 2028, in order to completely cripple society. What unions are they targeting? Well, this is from the form that the DSA had people fill out tonight. They're targeting education. They're targeting logistics, Amazon, UPS. They're targeting service industries like Starbucks and groceries. That was the most terrifying one, if I'm honest about it. The grocery industry, the food supply. Oh, great. They're targeting auto manufacturing. They're targeting airlines. And if you want to try to get a job in another industry, they'll probably help you out there. But those are the ones that they're specifically targeting because those are the ones that they believe are going to do the most damage when everyone goes on strike at exactly the same time 3 years from now. You know, one of the worst lies that the right has ever told people is that socialists don't have jobs, socialists are lazy, they just want everything handed to them for free, yada, yada, yada. Not only do socialists and communists have jobs, but they control the labor unions, and they're building a massive job network to form new unions, all leading up to their little revolutionary event where they are literally going to try to cripple all of society just to demonstrate that they can. I beg people, please stop underestimating your enemy, because they are literally planning out years in advance, building a massive organizational structure where they're getting socialist jobs in these strategic industries all over the country, and no one's talking about it because no one really knows about it. There are so many people who are not prepared at all for what the left is trying to do to our society. But people who follow my content and support my work, you're at the tip of the spear. You know this stuff before anyone else does. You can find my work over at decodetheleft.com. You can also find me on Substack, Karlyn, karlyn.substack.com. And if you want to talk to me about what the far left is up to, get in touch with me through this website. If you're a politician, if you're maybe someone in the government that, I don't know, maybe wants to do something about this, you let me know. Listen, man, I think one of the strongest things that we can do right now is for the government to hold congressional hearings into the political organizing activities of the unions. I am sick of anti-Semitism hearings. No more anti-Semitism hearings. I want congressional hearings into the political organizing activities of the unions, because the unions are what is going to mess up our entire world, and it's where they're going to organize their little revolutionary event that is going to lead to a revolutionary crisis in this country.
And that is genuinely what they're planning on doing. And again, it is a cut and dry color revolution playbook that they're running. The George Soros, Saul Alinsky playbook. They're preparing for this. They're setting a date 3 years in advance. It will be May 1st, 2028, that they intend to launch a communist revolution in this country. They're planning for it. They're getting ready for it. And by the way, this has almost succeeded in the past. I mean, it has succeeded in the past. There's a lot of elements of this that also occurred in the Russian Revolution. I think it's more aligned with something like what happened in Germany in 1918 with a communist revolution, which was exactly like this. You had, it was during war. The German authorities are very preoccupied with what's going on in the war. And actually, it started with, in the Navy in the northern part of Germany, there was a very low morale, and basically they played on that and got Navy ships to disobey orders. But then very quickly, the same revolutionary motivation cropped up in all these different cities and all, Hamburg and Munich and all these different places started declaring themselves independent Soviets, independent, communist organizations. And it all started with people in the unions using their position in the union, using the union meetings to spread socialism and to plan for this, a coordinated strike crippling the country, especially during a war. And I don't know how, the coming world war plays into this, but I wouldn't be surprised if first they start a war and then, we're in the middle of the war come 2028 when they shut everything down. So the intensity with which it needs to be solved is even greater, because it would be, very damaging already just to have all of these workers in groceries and trucking and, the automakers, like all these unions stopping at once would be devastating already. But imagine it's in the middle of a war that this happens. This is the way that communists almost took over Germany in 1918, led to the creation of the Weimar Republic and the eventual domination of the Nazis. But they're following exactly that playbook. And go look up the German Revolution of 1918, and you'll see very similar parallels to what's happening right now in the way this revolution is being seeded. And again, the reason that we know the exact date is because they tell us in these times, is this website, why everyone should be preparing for May Day 2028. Now, May Day 2028, noun, a plan to make the union contracts expire May 1st, 2028, all across the country to precede a general strike led by United Auto Workers for concessions from the ruling class. I mean, they're literally planning. I mean, they're telling you this is what they're planning on doing. They're going to make all these union contracts expire May 1st, 2028. And on May 1st, 2028, they plan to have all of these different unions, including unions that don't exist yet, right? They talked about getting people into Amazon specifically to create a union for that. So even the corporations and the industries that aren't unionized probably will be by 2028 because they have this plan. Okay, first we need to put people in power. Then they need to agitate for a union. Then we'll get a union there. Then on May 1st, 2028, we'll have that union go on strike and we'll basically hold the entire economy of America hostage until we get concessions from the ruling class. They are preparing a communist takeover of this country, and they're doing it right out in the open in front of everybody. They're doing it clandestinely as well, right? They'll talk about it amongst themselves. They'll write articles saying they're doing this, but then, of course, they aren't saying it to the people that are hiring them or anything like that. Like that aspect of it is secret. But what are we going to do about this? I mean, what is the solution to this? Is it to wait until they succeed? Is it to wait until May 1st, 2028 and have them all go on strike then to try to deal with it? Or should you maybe nip this in the bud since they're telling us their plan? They're working to get people in positions in unions for a coordinated strike to cripple the economy in order to get concessions. It's their words, verbatim almost. What are we going to do about this? What they're doing about it is they're getting ready for their branding. That's how far down the line of planning they are. Let's go to clip number six here. These are some of the, you know, George Soros operatives discussing what color to use for their color revolution, because this is a color revolution. Now they just have to decide on what, spectrum of the rainbow are they going to adorn themselves with as they try to overthrow the United States government. Let's watch.
Kathy asked a question that is a hot topic of debate internally, Leah. We need a national symbol of unity to stand against authoritarianism or for pro-democracy. I'm interested in using purple bandanas. It's not about being red or blue. It's about standing in solidarity with each other for democracy. How can we as a group come up with something we can stand behind? So we have had this conversation internally and with a lot of the No Kings Coalition and other folks. And we're circling around an idea that, Leah, we're not allowed to fully announce anything yet.
Well, I mean, so we're actually, I would just say, we agree this is a gap. And
yes,
one of the things
yes.
I'm backing and trying to figure out is like, what's getting organic pickup that we can start to pull out and capitalize on, right? And so thinking about things that we're seeing pop on the internet, things that we're seeing start to like take off in places like Reddit, the color yellow and black have come up a lot, which is obviously very like, you know, kind of people taking pieces of the No Kings logo and running with it as a color scheme. We agree this is like a need. And what we really want to do is try to figure out like what's already starting to organically take off that we can collectively come in together on. But we hear you and we think this is something that we're very much thinking about right now.
We had a whole hour long meeting with folks. Was it yesterday, Leah, just on this specifically? One of the challenges and something that we discussed is when you try to seed something like this, when you try to grow something like this, you start with an idea and we can all like you can debate like it should be purple, it should be yellow, it should be green, whatever it is. And one challenge is settling on what that idea is that you want to push. And then you've got this period in between when you've settled on the idea and when you actually make that a cultural phenomenon. And in the in-between period, what you need is a lot of people who say, screw it, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to be one of the first movers out there who's just, I'm all in yellow, or I've got my yellow bandana, or it's, whatever it is. And we're going to need a lot of people who do that. So this group, once we have something, we are going to be asking all of y'all to help be the first movers on this to make the thing a thing. Hopefully we'll be ready to come back here soon and try to push on something like that.
So again, that is from a Forward Observer from Mike Shelby, and we'll have him on tomorrow to talk about some of this and some of what else he's discovered. And by the way, you know, if anybody out there is like, they see what's going on, they're feeling like frustrated because they don't know what to do, but they want to do something, infiltrate. I mean, you got to be careful and you got to, you know, these are dangerous groups, but like they're all on Telegram, they're all on Reddit, they're all on these things. They're the easiest people in the world to pretend to be. To mimic them, just say, you know, retarded leftist crap, and they'll think you're the real deal. And like, these Zoom meetings, these conferences they have, you know, they're only semi-private. Like, a lot of people join in, they're just all on the left. We have right-wingers just infiltrating all of their groups. At the very least, it's going to force them further underground. It's going to stop that. It's going to really hamper their reach if they understand, hey, every time we try to talk about anything, even remotely public, swarms of right-wingers are in here listening to us and exposing us, then they're going to have to go underground. They're going to have to be more, you know, considerate about where they're talking about this stuff. And that alone, I think, could be something that anybody can do. You just got to go find the leftist side of the internet and start poking around. And again, we've been encouraging this, again, to be, you got to be careful on it and, you know, don't do anything violent and, you know, because then we're all going to get in trouble and that's the last thing that we want. But these people are planning a literal communist revolution. I can get more into it on the other side, but we've got that breaking news from Project Veritas I want to get into. But we're going to be talking about this for quite a bit. James O'Keefe. I'm sorry, not Project Veritas. This was a James O'Keefe reveal. But we'll be right back on the other side to keep talking about this. Just know, like, this is coming. They are doing it. They are planning. We could stop them now or we could wait. We do have a lot of breaking news to get into, including the latest from James O'Keefe, and we have a response from the DOJ about that. We'll go to that in just a minute. Just to finish up with what I was talking about. Again, because this is happening so out in the open, and I really want people to understand exactly what's going on here. They are very publicly announcing that they intend to stage a communist revolution in America on May 1st, 2028. Okay, they're not shy about this. Again, from this website, inthesetimes.com, they say that there's a plan May 1st to have all the union contracts expire on that same day to proceed to a general strike led by United Auto Workers for concessions from the ruling class. Okay, to me, even just the awareness of this plan means that there's a criminal conspiracy going on, right? I mean, if you're getting people into positions of power to start unions, like, you're violating contract law, there's any number of, you know, crimes going on with the conspiracy happening, again, out in the open here. UAW President Sean Fain sure seems serious. As he wrote for In These Times in 2024, if we build enough collective power to win universal health care and the right to retire with dignity, then we need to spend the next 4 years getting prepared. Fain first announced the idea in fall 2023 after UAW's historic stand-up strike won substantial gains from the big three automakers. The UAW has previously aligned their contracts with the big three to expire together, but this time UAW is also asking other unions from other sectors across the country to join and, as Fain put it, flex our collective muscles. The Chicago Teachers Union, the American Postal Workers Union, and other major unions have publicly supported the effort. So again, is this what unions are supposed to be for? I mean, I get that you might want to pressure your company or your industry to make some changes, but are they supposed to be collaborating with other unions to create a nationwide shutdown of the economy? I mean, that could be dangerous in and of itself. Especially if you have grocery workers. I mean, if the trucks stop running and the fact that they are collaborating with other unions to try to enact a full-scale nationwide shutdown of every industry at once in order to essentially blackmail the government into doing what they want. Like, this is not the way this country works. This is not the way politics works. This is a complete hijacking of the political system. And if you were saying the unions were, you know, telling people to go register to vote, like, sure, there's political activities the unions can be involved in, but coordinating with all the unions to shut down the American economy so that we're put in a position of desperation and willing to give them whatever they want, that's just straight up terrorism. That's blackmail. That's extortion. And they're advertising and they're writing about their intentions to do this. And I think it goes deeper than that. I don't think this is, you know, which, again, even if it was just what they say it is, what they admit to it being, is crazy. We're going to use our power as union representatives to shut down the American economy and demand that we get universal health care. You want universal health care? You vote for it. You vote for people that support it. It gets written into law, and then the law passes. That's the way our government is supposed to work. It doesn't work by a bunch of union reps extorting us and saying they're going to, you know, let us starve if we don't give them universal health care. It's insane that they're saying that on its face. But I think it's much deeper than that. I think their real intentions are to crash the American economy and then not accept any concessions. You think these people, you know, if they hear, okay, we'll have universal health care, they're like, all right, everyone back to work. No, these people are going for a full-fledged revolution. And we just heard it there. They're literally picking the color for their color revolution. So what do we do? We're just going to wait for them to do this? Again, the fact that they're doing it out in the open is so insulting to me and astonishing that they feel as though they have the ability to wage this war against us. And we're not going to do anything about it. No one's going to, like, how are we not going to see this coming? You're literally advertising it. It's just a matter of whether the people in authority feel like concerning themselves with a well-funded, well-organized, multi-year plan to overthrow the United States government. That is what their intentions are. Make no mistake. Because they've done this before, folks. They've done it multiple times before. Sometimes it works completely. Sometimes it doesn't work quite as well. But it always has a devastating and world-changing impact. Are we really going to let them do this? For real? Again, May Day 2028, they're putting out articles on the UAW website. May1.uaw.org brings you to this page where they are advertising this stand-up strike extending beyond UAW and including basically every industry they can worm their way into, including industries that don't even have unions right now. They're setting them up to participate in this. After the historic success of Stand Up Strike 2023, UAW President Sean Fain called on the rest of the labor movement to join our union and is preparing to strike on May Day 2028. May Day is the International Workers' Day, and it's our opportunity to create a crisis for the billionaire class to win more for all of us. So they're literally like, May Day is a communist holiday, and we're going to use this communist holiday to shut down the American government and overthrow or shut down the American economy and overthrow the American government. Okay, what? You can't, no, you're not allowed to do that. What the hell are you talking about? I don't want universal health care. I don't want anything. These people, you don't have a right to hijack our economy to force your views down everybody else's throat. This is treason. This is open treason as far as I'm concerned. We know that when workers align their fights to the same timeline, we have more leverage and we do alone. What if we don't do that just in a corporate chain or one union, but across the country and labor movement? Now is the time to get ready to create that crisis for the bosses. Do you literally have on the UAW website the published plan to create a crisis in this country to get what they want? What? How is this happening? How is nothing being done for this? They are the ones writing these things. And they're acting. There's something weird about, like, that the left, there's this thing where it's like if you're just honest about how evil you are, it's somehow not bad. I think it ties into the other thing we were talking about, how they don't believe anybody's good. They don't believe anything is ever sincere. They do not believe in the existence of, like, happy nuclear families. They have to believe that there's something sordid and disturbing going on underneath the surface. And so the sort of the flip side of that is they're like, oh yeah, if I, you know, just come out and say, like, yeah, I'm a dirty degenerate. I'm, you know, I abuse people and I take advantage of people and that's just who I am. And it's like, oh, well then I guess that must be good because you're just being honest about it. And it's like, no, it's still bad. Even though you're being honest about how evil you are, it's actually still bad. How do you not get that? You know what I mean? Do you see this phenomenon? So again, they're just like, yeah, we're going to, you know, cause a crisis and hijack the American economy, and then we'll force them to do what we want. And we're publishing it on our website, so therefore it's not bad. So, no, it's treason. It's treason, actually. You should be given the punishment for treason. And again, just look up, I mean, we can get into the details of it, but just go ahead and look up the German Revolution of 1918 to 1919, aka the November Revolution. It was an uprising started by workers and soldiers in the final days of World War I. It quickly and almost bloodlessly brought down the German Empire. Then, in its more violent second stage, the supporters of a parliamentary republic were victorious over those who wanted a Soviet-style council republic. The revolution began in October 1918 with a sailors' mutiny at Kiel. Within a week, workers and soldiers' councils were in control of government and military institutions across most of the Reich. On the 9th of November, Germany was declared a republic. So, think about what it takes to carry something like this off. They have pre-staged as unions, as labor unions, or as socialist confabs, the parties that are planning to take over the political establishment in various cities, just like they did in Germany. And you can look up videos and look at the map. Like Kiel is their, it's near Hamburg. It's up in the north of Europe on the North Sea, Baltic Sea. And it started there. But then it spreads out like a cancer, but then it pops up in all these other cities simultaneously. Munich had it was like the Bavarian communist, independent zone, the Chaz of pre-Weimar Germany. So they have to have all these things staged already. They're all in communication with each other. And then one of the groups sort of pops off and like actually takes over a city. And that's the signal for the rest of the groups to also pop off and take over their cities. And it's decentralized and they're in every major city and they're organized and in communication because of the unions they've established. But the unions are just the facade. They're just the disguise that these organizations are using. And you can find writings from like the Rus, because obviously Russia had fallen by this point in 1918 and were very interested. I mean, Lenin himself said, the most important thing is to get Germany to go communist. And he said, I would be willing to give up Russia if we can make Germany communist, right? Russia didn't have the, imperial power that Germany had. So they wanted really badly to turn Germany communist. And the way they did it was they sent agitators, they sent, people with the rhetoric, programmed in to go spread the socialist message, to work behind the scenes, knowing that they had to build up all of these little Soviets. Soviet just means, commune, basically, or just means council. That's what it actually means. And so they had these little workers' councils that were pre-staged, ready to become the city government as soon as the revolution popped off. That's what these people are doing. That's what the unions in America are doing. Are we going to let them do it? I mean, the result of what this happening in Germany could have very easily been Germany falls to communism. Instead, they sort of caught wind of this like right before it happened. But it essentially was the Free Corps, which was just like military generals sort of on their own and without orders, just going and crushing the rebellion just out of pure, patriotic pride. Basically, they would take over. The communists would take over some building, and the Free Corps, who were just, again, like these contingents of soldiers under patriotic generals that just said, screw it. I'm going in and we're going to kill all these people and take this building back. And so they did. And so, eventually the revolution was more or less crushed, but it took down the German Empire. And this is why the guy advocated. This is why Tsar Wilhelm abdicated Kaiser, they called him then. It's the same word as Tsar. Comes from Caesar. Means emperor. It's a reason that, in a lot of ways, the war was lost. And this is the thing. It's so funny. If you try to research this, good luck. Good luck using the internet to find the truth about the near communist revolution that Germany went through in 1918. You really can't find anything other than communist sources about it, which is very interesting, very intriguing to me. Makes you think, personally. Like if you go to YouTube and you search, German Revolution 1918, almost every response that I saw was from a literal communist channel. We're the Communist Brigade, and here's our story about how 1918 worked. And then they have like Wikipedia articles. It's like the stab in the back myth. It's like, was it really a myth? I mean, it seems like, in fact, it's absolutely, a historical fact that Germany was winning on the battlefield. No allied, Entente, English, French, no German territory was ever ceded. No foreign soldiers ever stepped foot on German soil during all of World War I, but they lost somehow. Yeah, they took land from France. They took land from all sorts of people. They were sort of dominating throughout a lot of World War I. America entering was, really changed the tide because of the Balfour Declaration with the UK. But Germany didn't lose militarily. They lost because they couldn't keep up the industry in Germany because the whole industrial base was infiltrated by socialists that were striking and agitating to, you know, stop producing things for the war effort. So I don't know, people, you know, it's just like, oh, the stab in the back myth. But it's like, okay, so the November Revolution happens, and then 2 weeks later, Germany surrenders, but it has nothing to do with it. Okay, so you have this, like, massive communist revolution breaking out all over the German state, forcing the German army to actually then fight its own, you know, socialist rebellion while simultaneously fighting on, you know, two fronts. Yeah, they were stabbed in the back. It's actually not a theory. It's just actually what happened when you read the history of it. But of course, the stab in the back so-called myth was one of the things that the Nazis used to come to power, so therefore it must not be true. But it is true. Doesn't mean the Nazis were right, but it does mean that, you know, the German people were stabbed in the back, and the eventual outcome was the rise of the German Workers' Party, the Nazis, but could have easily gone communist, and God only knows what the world would look like then. On November 10th, the Council of the People's Deputies was formed by members of Germany's two main socialist parties. And the Council of the People's Deputies immediately removed some of the empire's harsh restrictions. Those on the left wing of the revolution wanted to nationalize key industries, democratize the military, and set up a council republic. But the MSPD had control of most of the workers and soldiers' councils and blocked any substantial movement towards their goals. So again, you had this divide between the more moderate socialists and the more radical communists. But regardless, they overthrew the German Empire. It ended World War I. It led to the Treaty of Versailles and the humiliation of the German nation, only to, you know, later end with the rise of Nazism. So just understand, like, if you have historical knowledge of these types of things, alarm bells should be ringing in your head when you hear American unions basically following exactly the same playbook and announcing that they're planning on doing this in a nationwide fashion on May 1st, 2028. Just remember where you heard it first, InfoWars. And on that note, actually, let me ask you, probably, I think for the first time this show, to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com is where you can go to get all sorts of amazing supplements. But you're also getting, oh, we have creatine powder now. This is the thing, man. We have come out with stuff so often, I don't even know the new products that we have. So, and this is something that somebody was asking me about yesterday, right? She was asking about bone broth, but this is creatine powder, ultimate creatine power, now powder, now on sale at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you. And just please contribute to this singular outlet for truth and justice in the American way. And like Nick Fuentes said, fighting for ourselves, fighting for us, fighting for America, fighting for our heritage and our civilization that our forefathers fought and died and suffered through generation after generation to create. We're not just handing it over, okay? We're going to fight for it. And when we fight, we're going to win. So I hope you can support this true warfare that we're involved in by going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. Get the ultimate creatine powder. Get the ultramethylene blue. Sign up to be a VIP member. Oh, you can only get it if you're a VIP club member? That's interesting. So for our VIP club members, go get this exclusive access to the ultimate creatine. Or maybe, you know, if you want to just, you know, trick us, if you want to screw us over, I'll tell you how. Sign up for the VIP club and it costs $30, but then you get 40, and then you can buy the creatine powder that's exclusive for VIP members. And if you want, you can cancel anytime. So there you go. That's, I'm telling you the workarounds here, how you can get this stuff for significantly cheaper than certainly anywhere else on the internet, but even cheaper than other people at thealexjonesstore.com. I have to whisper this. We can't let them know I'm telling you how to get better deals at thealexjonesstore.com. But do sign up. And, you know, one of the things you get as a VIP club member, not just access to exclusive products and sales, but also you get access to the entire library of Alex Jones shows all the way back to like the early 2000s. And it's the only place on the internet you can find these. And you might want to, you know, download them and put them on a hard drive and put them in a Faraday cage and save them for the future, because we don't know where things are going to go. And such valuable information might be illegal soon. So make sure to take advantage of that while you can. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Now, let's get to this James O'Keefe reveal published just minutes ago. World exclusive bombshell, senior DOJ Epstein investigator reveals Epstein was CIA. Let's find out what they uncovered with this undercover investigation by James O'Keefe. Let's watch.
It's not talked about yet, but it'll soon come out that he was a CIA informant.
He was a CIA informant.
He was a CIA. I think he's protecting a lot of other people. He's not protecting himself because there's nothing there, but he's protecting a lot of people.
Because Trump's now saying it's a hoax, the case is like a hoax or something like that. Come on, you know it's not a hoax. He's been on the plane many times. Mm-hmm. It's just he was never on the plane with the kids.
I've seen the itineraries, and I've interviewed all the victims. There's never been an instance where Trump was on a plane with these kids and a rape occurred. But that can't be said for Clinton, and it can't be said for others. While the Clintons were on the plane, while Bill Clinton was on the plane, there were rapes that occurred.
Overheard at Phoenix Airport on September 8th, 2025, a senior Justice Department investigator who personally worked on the Epstein case tells all. Glenn Prager, who has reviewed Epstein itineraries and has interviewed Epstein's victims, drops a bombshell. He says that the DOJ did not want to go after Epstein because he's a CIA asset, that the evidence from his investigation confirms that Bill Clinton was present for alleged rapes on the Lolita Express, and that President Trump was not present for the rapes that Glenn Prager investigated, but that he is protecting a lot of other people that were.
How about this whole Epstein thing that's like going
on? I worked on that case. I used to interview all the victims. And in my picture was 20 to 30 victims in Palm Beach that I was interviewing and dealing with and stuff like that. And then we go ready to go to trial. And they would flip. Epstein would just pay them off. And they were just like little kids. They'd pay off their family. They're all broke kids and poor families and all. So you pay them off like anywhere from $150,000 to $500,000. Nothing in that guy's world.
Prager there describes how the victims that he interviewed were paid off by Epstein right before going to trial. Prager has worked as an investigator inside the Department of Justice for over 20 years.
According to Prager's LinkedIn About page, it says that during the tenure at DOJ, Prager served as an inspector overseeing sensitive investigations involving major DOJ components, including the FBI, DEA, Bureau of Prisons, U.S. Marshals Service, ATF, and the U.S. Attorney's Offices. This seems to corroborate what Prager told us.
He was tasked with interviewing Epstein's rape victims and investigating flight logs. On his backpack in the airport, we spotted an embroidered FBI patch, which caught the attention of our citizen journalist.
I'll tell you this, because no, it's not talked about yet, but it'll soon come out that he was a CIA informant.
He was a CIA informant.
He was a CIA.
Although many have suspected it to be the case, this is the first time a Department of Justice official has confirmed that Epstein worked for the CIA and is a foreign asset.
So DOJ was settling the case, and they were just letting him, do house arrest and they minimized his arrest. Part of that is because all the victims kept on flipping, and they didn't have anyone to go to trial with. The more importantly part is they didn't want to go after him. He's an asset for the United States and Israel for the CIA. I just know that's what he was, and that's why he was protected so long for this. And people turn a blind eye about all this garbage that he's doing in the United States. He had a lot of secrets. More about Israeli stuff than anything else. I mean, he was doing stuff for Israel and the United States. He's working for both.
Glenn Prager, the Department of Justice investigator on the Epstein case, then talks about whether President Trump was involved. Many are trying to tie Trump to Epstein, but what Glenn Prager says is that Trump wasn't present during the inappropriate sexual behavior that he was investigating. But Prager does say that Bill Clinton was, backed up by his experience interviewing the victims and reviewing the Epstein Lolita Express itineraries. Quote, they killed the Epstein list to protect the Clintons.
Well, they claim that, you know, that Trump's, you know, involved in the rapes and all that stuff. He wasn't. I mean, I've seen the agendas. I've seen the itineraries, and I've interviewed all the victims. There's never been an instance where Trump won a plane with these kids.
Wow, James O'Keefe does it again. This is a this is really a bombshell undercover investigation from James O'Keefe. Now, the DOJ has responded to this. What they say is this, quote, "This individual worked at the Department of Justice as a program analyst over 15 years ago. He has no understanding of or access to the underlying facts in this investigation. His statement should not be considered accurate. It is disgusting that somebody would further exploit victims of sexual abuse by fabricating stories for their personal benefit." So they don't say that he's lying. Now, he claims to have interviewed the victims and been involved in the investigation, which happened 15 years ago. So that's not contradictory. So as far as the DOJ goes, this is almost a confession. That's an incredible video. We'll be right back. I still have a lot to cover, so I wasn't thinking I was going to open up phone lines today. But I think I am. I think I am going to, because I think I need to. I genuinely don't understand the way people are reacting to what I would call, and forgive me for this, leftist violence. What do they think it is if it's not leftist violence? I'm genuinely baffled by the response to this. And so I think I need to take calls for people that disagree with me or think that I'm involved in something else. I don't even know what people think is going on here anymore. I don't know what they think has been happening over the last 10 years or so in terms of overt persecution of the right wing by the people in power. I'm really baffled. I'm just baffled at all this. So I'll go ahead and give out the phone number now. And I especially, so here's what is inspiring me to take calls. So Matt Walsh puts out a tweet that says, "Left-wing violence is a national emergency. We can't even go a week anymore without multiple left-wing terror attacks. The entire force of the federal government must be used to ruthlessly subdue and crush this terrorist threat. This cannot continue. We cannot live this way." So obviously we were talking about this endlessly before Charlie Kirk even got shot. Has been a main topic of our conversation since Trump got into office, the violence of the left, the coordinated action by the left, the assaults on ICE facilities being carried out in a coordinated fashion by members of Antifa, the multiple number of people that have been murdered by Antifa in cold blood, Aaron Danielson being maybe the best example, Trump supporter literally murdered, and then the murderer being hidden by his compatriots. I mean, what do we think is happening here exactly? Okay, so I agree with Matt Walsh and what he says there. Since the Charlie Kirk murder 2 weeks ago, and again, it sort of hurts my mind to think it was 2 weeks ago. It feels like 1 week at the most. Am I crazy? Was it? It was 2 weeks ago, right? September 10th, September 24th. Yeah, so crazy. So in those 2 weeks, there's been this attack on the ICE facility this morning. I think two, perhaps three victims murdered in that. We had shooting after shooting, to the point that it is literally, we can't go a couple days without another radical leftist attacking ICE or killing random people or shooting up a country club and yelling Free Palestine or any of these things. So it's like, what should we do here? It seems like people are just saying nothing. They're saying we shouldn't do anything. So my response to Matt Walsh was, since the assassination of Charlie Kirk, there have been at least three more shootings by radical leftists. Other people are saying four. I think I may have missed one. There's one at an Air Force base, I guess. Apparently there was another school shooting on the day Charlie Kirk got murdered. And then I said Insurrection Act. Now, the Insurrection Act being invoked means that the militia gets called up. It doesn't mean that the federal government, you know, gets censorial powers. You know, maybe that's an aspect of it, but that's what you do if you want the militia to be invoked, is you declare the Insurrection Act, and then you can have sheriffs in every county create posses of the militia members there. Militia meaning simply somebody capable of waging war, a male over 18, under 50. You are the militia. I am the militia. Alex is the militia. We are the militia. Seems to me like when we have this nationwide phenomenon of leftist groups carrying out violent attacks on a nearly daily basis, I want to fight back against that. And we don't have the ability to fight back against these individuals. That's why we have a government. Why do people think it's fascist to shut down violent terrorists operating in our country? What is the solution, if not the federal government? I'm going to take your calls on this because I genuinely don't understand the argument people are making that this could be a bad thing. We're already in tyranny. I'm going to open up the phone lines now. If you want to call in, the number to dial is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. Specifically, I want calls from people who disagree with me because I really don't understand the argument being made against federal intervention against leftist violence or why the term leftist violence is so triggering to some people. What other term would you prefer I use? Because they're leftist and they're committing violence because of that ideology. What else should I call it exactly? And what is the danger of having the federal government go after these people? I don't really get it. It's not like we need any more governmental powers. It's not like this is a Patriot Act 2.0 where it's like I'm just so scared of the threat that I'm like, oh, just take my freedoms, please make me safe. We are already being repressed in like a million ways. They already spent 4 years under Joe Biden systematically like hunting down right-wingers. Through the FACE Act, they declared teachers going to school board meetings domestic terrorists. And it's like, I'm not asking for that. But the people committing the terror attacks, yeah, should probably be arrested, at least questioned. I mean, it's like we're not taking this seriously at all. Apparently, we've lost the Tyler Robinson's boyfriend is missing now. Charlie Kirk's suspected trans lover has vanished. Shaken neighbors share fresh fears as new photos show abandoned home. The trans boyfriend of Charlie Kirk's alleged assassin has fled their former love nest, and locals tell the Daily Mail they never want to see him again. I guess he's gone. I mean. Wait, so this guy had, like, knowledge of the shooting. He didn't call the cops. He didn't turn his friend in. It looks like had awareness of the event before it ever happened. But you're not going to arrest him. You're going to let him go. Like, why are we not taking this threat seriously? Do we not think it's a threat? Again, we just had earlier today another attack on an ICE facility. He's in a safe space. Needs to lay low for a long time. Okay. Great. I genuinely don't get it. Should we not do anything? Is there something that you want? You just think the Insurrection Act isn't the right thing? Right now they're not doing anything. Right now, the people who train our FBI think that Antifa is an ultimate good and that opposing them makes you a white supremacist. The ADL has that on their website. So what are we doing here? I really don't understand the objection here. So, yeah, I'll take your calls on that for people who disagree. And we'll go out to those calls here momentarily. Like I said, I don't need to take calls. I got plenty of videos to go to here. We've got Lindsey Graham, like orgasming over the prospect of full-fledged war between America and Russia. We've got Tucker Carlson doing an interview with Glenn Greenwald talking about our relationship with Israel and introducing some pretty shocking stuff. From Donald Trump, we have this in response to the deadly shooting at the ICE field office. This was published just minutes ago. I have been briefed on the deadly shooting at the ICE field office in Dallas, Texas. It has now been revealed that the deranged shooter wrote anti-ICE on his shell casings. This is despicable. The brave men and women of ICE are just trying to do their jobs and remove the worst of the worst criminals in our country. But they're now facing unprecedented increase in threats, violence, and attacks by deranged radical leftists. This violence is a result of the radical left Democrats constantly demonizing law enforcement, calling for ICE to be demolished, and comparing ICE officers to Nazis. The continuing violence from radical left terrorists in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination must be stopped. ICE officers and other brave members of law enforcement are under grave threat. We have already declared Antifa a terrorist organization, and I will be signing an executive order this week to dismantle these domestic terrorism networks. I'm calling on Democrats to stop this rhetoric against ICE and America's law enforcement right now. The Trump administration is fully committed to backing law enforcement, strong borders, securing our homeland, deporting violent illegal criminals, and fully rooting out the left-wing domestic terrorism that's terrorizing our country. Thank you for your attention in this matter. Again, you know, I've been, you know, worried about the process by which some of these things are being put into place. I don't like that they're like looking through people's social media before they give them visas to make sure that they're not anti-Israel. Like, there's creepy stuff. There's overreach happening. But again, I don't see the threat if you say Antifa is domestic terrorists. What is the threat if you're not Antifa? I genuinely, I'm very confused by this, especially because there is no like turnabout is fair play threat here. There's no like, well, you're setting the precedent. Now they're going to go after you. They've been going after us for 10 years. That's already happening. So what is the response? Honestly, I want to know. So we'll go out to calls. Let's go to Mike in Ohio first. Mike in Ohio, thanks for calling in online too. What's your take on the so-called leftist violence sweeping the nation? What should be done about it?
Well, I mean, I totally agree that violence in any nature from any side is wrong, and I feel like on that aspect, Congress should get off their booty and do something, because at the end of the day, an executive order can be overturned by the next president, and then what's to say they don't label some right-leaning organization as a domestic terrorist group, and then they target us. So it's a swinging pendulum that's dangerous. But don't they already do that to us?
I mean, that's what I'm confused by. I mean, InfoWars was literally declared a white supremacist, I don't know if domestic terrorist was the phrase they used, but white supremacist extremist organization by the FBI. We were labeled that in 2013. So this is what I don't understand. What is the risk exact? And by the way, they are already saying, Gavin Newsom and you know, Alex keeps playing the clip of what's his name? What's that guy's name? House Majority Hakeem Jeffries saying, when we get back into power, you better watch out. We're going to throw you all in prison. Like, they're already saying that.
Even in polls, you know, it's shown that Democrats are way more likely to be physically violent or want to throw us in jail versus the right being polled versus the left, you know, like we're much more forgiving and all that. So I totally agree that the violence is wrong. The Kirk assassination was and is still a mess. We don't know what's going on with that. But, you know, I didn't know if you had heard. I had shared earlier this morning on X that there was a Hamas person detained by ICE in Texas recently, just a day or so ago, and that he may have been at that facility and may have been the target of the shooting. And I know we don't have any information as to the nationality of the people who were killed, the two people that were killed that were detained this morning, but I went to look up that guy's name on my X post, and it's literally been deleted. Like, a lot of my ex posts, if they want to add a community note or something, they do. But this is the first time I've ever experienced it completely being gone.
That is very weird. Do you mind giving out your Twitter account so I can?
It's at Gonna Get Ya.
Okay.
And it's Michael Taylor is my name, but it's G-O-N-A. G-E-C-H-A.
G-E-C-H-A. Okay. So what exactly did you post?
I posted a, I just retweeted or re-X'd a post from a girl earlier who had said she had confirmation that a Hamas individual wanted by our FBI had been detained by ICE during a raid, and that he was possibly could have been at that facility and been the actual intended target, not even ICE people. So I'm saying, like, if that is true, and then they write anti-ICE messages on the bullet, it's just more fuel to the fire to stoke this civil war that we know they want. I mean, at the end of the day, whether it's China, Russia, or our left, or our deep state, or whoever's putting the money in Israel to push us into this civil war, there's a lot of push in this country to get us divided as a civilization so that these other countries who are building a lot of power right now can come in and clean us up.
Yeah. So to me, if, you know, I'm looking at the trajectory, the way things are going, I'm seeing the violence on the left accelerating and being justified by people in power and the media and being, you know, downplayed or lied about in order to facilitate it continuing. I don't see the right wing just putting up with this forever. I don't see, like, at a certain point, you know, how many more people are they going to kill before right wingers go, you know what? Like, it wouldn't be, I mean, I don't even want to say it, but, like, it would not be hard for, like, some good old boys to, like, you know, lay down the law on their own. It's not like we're dealing with some sort of, like, overwhelming threat that we can't deal with. It's just we're not dealing with it. And so my whole thing is, if we don't want civil war, then we need the government to root out the domestic terrorists that are trying to start one. That's where I'm coming from, which is what I don't understand, that people are saying, like, maybe they think I'm advocating for a civil war. No, I desperately want to avoid a civil war, so the government needs to do its job and not let right-wingers be targeted without any consequence, because that's what leads to civil war. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, no, amen to that. And I feel like at the end of the day, we have to dismantle a lot of the NGO groups that are getting money from foreign countries or whoever that are funding this leftist dividing political rhetoric in our country. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we can target specific groups, but we really need to target the root cause. And I feel like that's the root cause of a lot of these problems. And I feel like they're intentionally not addressing these problems so that these problems can escalate, whether it be like our own governments bought out by foreign powers or they're doing it for their own benefit in the end game. I don't know at the end of the day what's going on, but you know, every president's gotten a letter when they come into office telling them, hey, this is the plan, this is how it's going to go. So I at the end of the day, I think the problem is that the right is so busy in their life, and we have jobs, we have families, we have things that we can legitimately lose, whereas the left are childrenless, you know, basement-dwelling cat people that just want to, at the end of the day, bring down this country because they think it's all about communism and equality, and I don't know, you know, and I feel like Kirk was a good voice that could have brought a lot of people and was bringing a lot of young people to the light to see, you know, this rhetoric is divisive. At the end of the day, if you really just find Jesus Christ, we can all have a level playing field because you're all going to believe the same thing at the end of the day. You're going to love your brother. You're going to love your neighbor, you know, and I feel like this is definitely demonic powers or something trying to just destroy our connection to God.
Yeah, I agree. Especially when you see the video. I mean, again, this was after Antifa was declared a domestic terrorist, and we showed some of the videos already. But I mean, we can go to, you know, clip four here. This is Antifa members attacking reporters. We can go ahead and go to that. We might want to keep the audio down because I don't know if it's curse words or what. But I mean, we got these, like, again, black clad communists just running around assaulting people, and you know, it's like, well, why do we let this out? What are we doing here? What are we doing exactly? And I got video after video from this. You know, this was a day after they were declared domestic terrorists, and they all have weapons and are surrounding a federal building and menacing the soldiers. And it's like, okay, I want them arrested. What are we talking about? I want these people to be punished for what they doing for the violence they're committing. Like, what? And I'm suddenly a fascist for just being like, hey, these people shouldn't be allowed to lock federal employees in a building and try to set it on fire. Sorry, I know that's, you know, maybe I'm violating some bizarre libertarian / anarchist rule about wanting the government to do something at some point. But like, what is it going to take exactly? It's insane. These people are allowed to walk around like they do. But we're not supposed to do anything about it. But we just have to shut up and take it, because having our government do anything for us is somehow a violation of these morals. Again, I don't get it. Thanks for the call, Mike. Let's go to Albert in Austin. I think he disagrees with me. Albert, thanks for calling in. Line 3. Albert in Austin. Wait for it. Guys, let's bring on Albert in Austin. Okay, Albert, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Finally. Hey, you got your glasses today, too. So it's crazy hearing you guys just finally taking the word that's coming from the FBI or whatnot as gospel as to what's going on. But honestly, you don't even know what the ideology of Robinson.
Well, hold on. Let me stop you right there. I don't know what the FBI is saying about any of that. I haven't gotten any talking points from the FBI. I'm looking around at all of the leftists making videos about how much they want violence to occur, and I'm looking at the shootings that keep happening against like Catholic school children and ICE facilities. I mean, do you think this is all are these right wingers doing this? Like, what do you think? I'm not trusting the FBI on anything. I'm observing reality, right? That this is one of the things I'm confused at, because that's what people are accused. They're like, so now you think the FBI is the fountain of honesty? And it's like, no, I'm seeing the violence being committed against right wingers. Well, what am I missing here?
That kid that shot up the Catholic school, you don't even know his ideology either.
Yes, I do. He wrote an entire manifesto and had YouTube videos explaining what he was doing, and he was a transgender person.
Griper, did you not watch that video? The kid was talking in Russian. He's part of that whole Telegram thing.
Okay.
You know, where they're online recruiting these frigging incels to go shoot up people and get the high score. And then you got Lance Bolter, that idiot that is a frigging InfoWars listener, going and shooting the people in Minnesota, you know. When Robinson got caught and they got the bullets and all that, Grok came out Grok was saying immediately that it was a Griper, and so was Milo, friend of the show, saying it was a Griper. And you guys are having Fuentes on, letting him clear his name as much as he possibly can. Honestly, nobody knows for certain that the kid is a Griper, but I'm pretty sure the kid's a Griper. I mean, he's doing a slob squat, wearing a Adidas tracksuit. Of course he's a freaking Griper. Nobody else is doing that kind of crap.
Somebody does a slob squat, means they're a Griper? I mean, I genuinely have no idea what you're talking. I mean, I know what you're talking about, but like, I'm not seeing.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, you 4chan person.
Uh huh. So he wasn't a Griper. He was clearly a leftist from everything that we've seen. Again, I don't even trust what we've seen about him from the FBI. But I've seen the way the left responded to the Charlie Kirk murder, and the FBI didn't create all the videos of people celebrating and laughing about it. So. So you think that the guy who shot? Do you think they're all right wingers? You think all this left wing violence is actually right wingers?
What I can tell you is, I keep hearing that right wingers are more capable of doing violence from what right wingers, you know. And honestly, it's just crazy. You guys got all the guns. You've been talking about it for decades. The Boogaloos and the friggin' the friggin' Proud Boys and the friggin' just any number of these. But plainly, Lance Bolter coming out and writing this this crazy old Tim Walz wannabe to kill the Congress people so that he could have the friggin' Congress seat. He just ran again for the damn governorship. This is nonsense. And honestly, when that was happening, you could listen to Alex talking on the program, and it sounded like Alex was giving notes on how not to make it sound like you were a right-winger doing this and how to make it sound like a false flag. This is complete bullcrap. And, you know, this bullet now with the crayon on it that says anti-ICE, like that's real. And, you know,
so again, this is what I'm confused at. So you think right-wingers are shooting up ICE facilities and then killing themselves, pretending to be left-wingers?
I'm pretty sure that that's what's going to happen. That's what you're going to find out with this kid. That's what you're going to find out with Tyler Robinson.
So you think right-wing extremists, instead of attacking left-wingers, have decided they need to attack right-wingers to create leftist violence that doesn't actually exist? Like, again, this is what I don't get. You live in a fantasy world.
The kid this morning wasn't attacking right-wingers. He was shooting detainees. He shot three detainees at a freaking ICE facility.
I know. That's why we say these people are not capable of committing violence in a you know, successful way. I mean, most of their shootings are not exactly well carried out. That would not be the case with right-wingers. I don't even know where you're coming from. It sounds like you're just desperate to blame every piece of violence on right wingers, and you're manipulating non-existent evidence to get to that conclusion. When all of the evidence that we see, again, from the shooters themselves, from the people online celebrating it and supporting him, I mean, it's just, this is what I don't understand, man. It's like the leftists, which I'm sure you're one, Albert, who like are both celebrating the violence and blaming it on the right wing, right? This is cognitive dissonance. These two things can't exist in your head at the same time in any, you know, realistic sense. You're celebrating the murder and you're like, good, you know, we hated Charlie Kirk and we wanted him to die and I'm glad he's dead. But also it was actually a right winger and the left would never do that sort of thing. It's like this is bullcrap. Like that position is utter complete nonsense. So I, again, just don't even know what world you guys are living in. It's crazy. Let's go to Daryl in North Carolina. Daryl, you're on the air, line one. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, Harrison. Hey, I believe that guy believes all of that 100% because, you know, we are under the most intense brainwashing, and it depends on where you're getting your news. And people are passionate, whether it's one side or the other. And I keep thinking that we're just being, you know, it's all being guided by intelligence agencies. Doesn't matter which one, because they're all under the payroll of the central banks who look to be aligning us for this World War III. So I think it's going to get worse, this violence. I think it's all being planned. And I do think we're going to have troops on the street real soon everywhere, which how can we not? You can't just let violence, crazy violence happen all the time. You're going to have to get control of it. And, yeah, that's going to crash the economy, which I think is the plan as well, because that will make the 20 to 30-year-olds more pliable to enter the military to fight whatever they're brainwashed to go and fight, whether it's Middle East theater, Russian theater, Taiwan theater, maybe even Venezuelan theater. I think they'll all be passionately, like that last caller, ready to go because we're being brainwashed.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I mean, it seems like, to me, the people in charge are doing everything they can to, you know, allow this violence to continue. Every mainstream media outlet is trying to downplay it and underscore it. I mean, we know they're controlled by the intel agencies. The discussion right now is what is to be done with all of the violence breaking out, the political violence, we'll call it, since apparently leftist violence is... I don't know. It's evidence I'm an agent of some sort. I genuinely don't understand it. That apparently is what has gone out, is that calling it leftist violence, even though that's what it is somehow, you know, evidence that I believe everything the FBI says. I'm very, very confused by this. So I'm trying to get it explained to me. I have not yet. Let's go to Max in Wisconsin now. And actually, this might be a different topic, but it's a very interesting one anyway. Max, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. I don't think we're giving Trump enough power and that he should be doing more like what Putin did in Russia. I don't know if you're aware, he banned the Satanic Church and classified the LGBTQ as an extremist group. So I think that should be done here because it's obviously satanic. Churches believe in death and sacrifice and that type of stuff. And I don't think it's the same as a religion, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I don't know, it's not really regarding the leftist violence, but regarding the Kirk shooting, which was pretty wild, was that there's a Nicolas Cage movie called Snake Eyes.
Right.
And in that movie, there's an assassination of a character called Charles Kirkland. And he's shot in the neck on September 10th in the movie. And there's like a giant Illuminati eye on a blimp flying through the screen. And I just thought it was yet another one of those signifiers on these worldwide events and mass trauma, mind control events of like pre-programming in cinema. And kind of makes me believe in all the time travel stuff we've been hearing about.
I mean, this one is really weird. You know, for practically every like major event, there will be some movie that sort of reflects it, you know, a little bit. But this one is really astonishing. It's the guy's name is Charles Kirkland. He's shot in the neck. I mean, there's a lot of parallels that are really hard to explain as coincidence. So, yeah, this is a particularly bizarre synchronicity. What do you think it means?
I think it's like a calling card, and it's like to show like, hey, we're so advanced and we're so good at planning, and we have the time travel technology either with information or literally, and that we're able to do things like this planning wise, you know, because for me, it's just too many coincidences, you know. And it happens over and over again, like, you know, with the Simpsons and 9/11 and all the other 9/11, September 11th things that happened, you know, and also people forgot that it was just, the anniversary of, Shinzo Abe's assassination, Sunday, this past Sunday. So the timing stuff, I think it's part of that like magic thing they do. You know, they show like, oh, we're going to tell you beforehand exactly what we do. So then when we do it, it's even more powerful. And it's like priming the pump, you know?
Yeah, I usually have sort of a different interpretation of that in terms of like what's really happening. I think it's less about sort of like a cult ceremony than it is about just how law works and how fault works. And I've explained this before that I think it's less about like fulfilling some ceremonial prerequisite where you have to offload your karmic burden by telling people what you're going to do before you do it. I think it's more about getting people involved in the corruption so that it's their fault as well as yours. So like getting people to sort of participate in their own abuse or sort of telling people ahead of time, hey, here's what we're going to do to screw you over. Literally in contract law, like if you sign a contract that says I can screw you over and I get your signature on that, then you have no recourse legally when I eventually screw you over. And I've talked about this in terms of like the way a lot of musical artists are sabotaged or taken advantage of, and, you know, corrupt forces will rob them or, you know, force them to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. And the way they do that is by getting them to sign a contract by saying, hey, look, I can make you a star. You just have to sign this contract. Then as soon as you sign it and the contract says you have total control of my likeness and everything, then there's nothing you can do when they screw you over eventually. So I always tend to lean more toward like away from the occult stuff and more towards just like, no, this is just the way power works and the way that people can get away with screwing you over is they get you to go along with it and agree to it. Then you have no recourse. But then there's stuff like this, where you've got the guy with the very similar name being shot in exactly the same way. And then it's like, okay, maybe there is something to the occult ceremony aspect to it. I won't write it off entirely, but yeah, that was a very strange example of predictive programming in one way or the other. Snake Eyes is the name of the movie. It looks like a bad movie, but I'd never heard of it before this.
Movie wasn't bad, but astrologically also, it's during the time in the occult called the Snake Mouth, where they do in history, in ancient times, did do ritual sacrifice before engaging in giant battles.
Interesting.
Or warfare. So I thought that was interesting.
Okay.
And also, oh, go ahead.
Oh, look at this. In the movie, the person deduces the sniper, a known Palestinian terrorist named Tariq bin Rabat, assassinated Kirkland over the Pentagon's large-scale defense cooperation with the systems transferred to Israel. Okay, so yeah, some pretty interesting synchronicities there. That's a movie, Snake Eyes, that people have discovered have a lot of strange coincidental alignment with reality. Maybe on purpose, maybe not. We don't know. Thank you for the call, Max. Let's go to Badass Uncle Sam in New Orleans, Louisiana. Thanks so much for calling in, Badass Uncle Sam. I'm a big fan of yours, and you have an answer to the question I've posed. Thanks for calling in, sir.
Yeah, well, back at you, brother. Back at you.
Thank you.
But you keep on asking for, you know, you don't know what to do. Hey, I think they got our founding fathers wrote a playbook for what to do. It's called the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
It's called the Constitution. We got the Bible. The only thing we're lacking is the courage to go ahead and do what's necessary. You're worried about, a civil war? We're in a civil war. Right. They are already killing us. We can't avoid something we're already in. So what do? I'm out on the street 3 days a week confronting these animals. And I got to tell you, they are the only ones left now because most of them have been chased. They left. They didn't chase themselves out. They left. Since COVID, they saw the craziness there. Men can have babies and, you know, men and women sports and all this idiocy. Chase. They're in the minority. But they project themselves in the majority. Why? They make themselves visible. They organize. They get out on the streets. They do stuff. It blows my mind when people come to that liberal cesspool in New Orleans and they see me and, oh, you're the greatest thing we've seen in New Orleans. Yeah, well, of course, it's a liberal cesspool. What else did you expect? You know, and I was going to wear my Trump hat or Trump shirt. I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to cause any trouble. Yeah, they get away from me. I don't want to be seen with you.
Right.
Yep. You go to this liberal cesspool here, and every third block, you're going to have some NGO out there. Would you sign up for gay rights? Would you sign up for Save NPR? Would you sign up for Planned Parenthood? Where are we? Why are we next to them? I hate it when these guys go, man, there will be more people like you out here. What's stopping you?
Right.
Instead of going on a vacation or going to the ball game, we are in the war. Act accordingly. Do it. Confront these people. I confront them every damn weekend by myself. I've been doing what Charlie Kirk has been doing for 13 years.
Absolutely.
Out on that street.
No, you're a trailblazer, man, and the fact you're still out there is really admirable because it cannot be easy to face some of the people you face. Let me ask you that. You've been out there on the streets for 13 years. How has it changed? Are people more open to what you're saying, less open to what you're saying, more angry, less angry? How have you seen reactions to what you do? And if people don't know, Badass Uncle Sam dresses up like Uncle Sam, and he goes out there with posters and just talks to people and spreads the gospel of the Constitution, talks about, you know, America and our founding and the principles that we believe in here at InfoWars. So you're out there with your booth every weekend. How has the response to you changed over time?
Well, dramatically, but the majority of the NPCs, they're the low, whatever. They got their own little worlds. They're not paying attention, but could care less. But overwhelmingly, people always ask me, what kind of reaction are you getting? I says, well, most people ignore me.
Mm.
But overwhelmingly, the people that see what I'm doing out here, that look at the Trump cutout and the posters, it is overwhelmingly positive. Now, I don't know what ones that do not agree with might be saying or thinking. You know, they could, and I've always thought about maybe putting some microphones and cameras 20 feet out just to check out what they would say. But, of course, you know, as a matter of fact, the video you got up, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly is a good example of it. I put up, it's sort of like that. If one confronts me, then they sort of look around for comrades, and the other leftists. Doesn't make any difference. they all scatter because all you have to do is do what Charlie did, do what Jesus Christ did, ask them questions. Right. And when they can't answer you, they run. They make an excuse that, yeah, we're an idiot, I can't spend any more time with them. They run. That's what I'm saying. Confronting these people is so easy, so simple. And why we don't do it is because why? We're scared. We're scared of it. Are you serious? Of these skinny jean, pencil neck, no knitting, purple haired, overweight, out of shape, couldn't shoot a, don't want to know which gun to shoot out of anyway. This is what we're scared of. And they're winning. Why? Because give them credit for this. They got the balls to be out there. They have, look, they are easily controlled. That's why the people who are running the NGOs, they feed off of that ignorance. They feed off of that stupidity. And these morons, because they're void on the inside, they don't have God in them. They don't have direction. They don't know history. They know the history that they're told, and then who's causing them to feel the way they feel, and it's that person's fault. So they get their groups, they form it. You already brought it up. Now, they planned this all the way out to, what, 28-8, right? How are they going to do this? All right. Well, how about, well, sure, infiltrating them, fine. How about finding out where they're going and kicking in the doors?
And that's what I would do if I was in charge. No, you're exactly right. And I've been saying this whole time, I sort of get, you know, I get the impulse. Most people just want to go along to get along, and they just, you know, they hear how aggressive the left is, and their response is just like, hey, look, I'm not about to get in a big fight over this. Let's just move on. And you know, I understand that impulse. I understand, but it's time to put that away. It's time to confront these people, especially when it comes to something like Charlie Kirk, when there is no justification for the way these people are acting or speaking. And I saw it on today. It was a big topic of conversation on X with people saying, you know, isn't it weird that leftists will just say the most heinous stuff to you as if you believe it or agree with them? Like, they're sitting there with people they don't know, and they're just like, Trump should be shot in the head. And they just expect everybody to agree with them, because usually people who don't agree will just stay silent. And it's like, now is the time to speak up and just assert your moral superiority and just go, that is a horrible thing to say. How dare you? Like, what is wrong with you? You are the one who's offended. You can be the one who is imposing on them. Don't let them impose on you. And if they try to come back to you with blah, 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 just go back to this. Don't try to engage with them. Don't try to engage in their distractions, because they're going to start bringing up stuff that's wrong, and you're going to try to convince them what the truth is, and they don't really care what the truth is. It's just a talking point to them. So you just go back to, no. You justified a man's murder, and that is sick, and you should apologize. You just stand your ground and don't let these people impose upon you. You have to have the will to fight. I could not agree more. Badass Uncle Sam, what a wonderful surprise hearing from you. Any final words, sir?
Yeah, I'm about ready to take it to the next level, and I'm going to go broke if I can't get the funding to do it. I'm about ready to order a new rig, and I'm going to have two LED screens, 6x3. I'm going to be live streaming InfoWars to the street.
Ooh, I like it.
And when this takes off the way I know it's going to do, I'm going to put it out. And I'm going to have one in every major city, because the battleground is on the streets.
Right.
Blogging ain't doing it. That ain't where you got to reach the people that need to be reached. You need to wake these people up on the streets where the... Look, any military guy will tell you, if you don't control the streets, you don't control anything.
Right.
Well, who controls the streets? Why are the leftists out on the streets? Why do you see them marching? Why do you see them rioting? Why do you see the NGOs out there? That's where the battle is. So I'm going to up my battle. And if anybody wants to help me contribute, and if you want to go ahead and fund me on this, I will pay you back. I need about $15 to do it properly. So, and I want to get out this out as quickly as possible. I've got everything lined up. I've got everybody lined up to put it together. I can have it.
You're the real deal, man. I think anybody who wants to contribute to a really, you know, effective patriot actually out there in the fight, on the ground, on the front lines, Badass Uncle Sam is a sure thing. I mean, you can bet on this guy. He's been doing it on his own for 13 years. We do what we can to support. He's got a band.video channel you can go to share the videos. Badass Uncle Sam, band.video. You can find him there. How can people support you?
BadassUncleSam.com. There's a gift send, go there. There's a PayPal. And if you want to email me, if you want to sponsor the whole thing or work it out with you, I'll send you the collateral. Let's go.
Amazing. Badass Uncle Sam. Contribute to him, folks, if you support what he does, which you absolutely should, especially in New Orleans. It's frankly dangerous to be out in the French Quarter in New Orleans spreading conservatism and patriotism. BadassUncleSam.com. All right. Thank you so much, sir. I really do appreciate it. I do want to get on to other callers, but keep it up. And I do encourage our audience to support anybody that's out there making a difference and actually, you know, putting themselves on the line. Thank you, Badass Uncle Sam. I really do appreciate it. Let's go to Kelly in Tennessee now. Kelly in Tennessee, go ahead. You're on the air about the Insurrection Act.
Hey, Harrison, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. First, I want to thank all of you for all the work you've done. I've got subscriptions to most of the supplements that you have, and they have helped me tremendously. And the methylene blue, the Shilajit, and the Irish sea moss, I love it.
Fantastic. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Go there today. Thank you. Appreciate that. And I'm not just, you know, by the way, let me just reassert, not just being flippant, I really do appreciate anybody that goes and supports us. We understand you're not the left. You're not being funded by NGOs. You work hard for your money. And so we try to deliver not just a product on screen that's worth it, the news is worth it, but the products are worth it as well. So thank you very much for supporting us. And you really are the engine, the fuel that keeps this engine running. So thank you for that. Genuinely, Kelly, thank you for supporting us.
No, I appreciate that. And it's a true pleasure to talk to you. I just wanted to talk to you about the fact that I really believe that Donald Trump should invoke the act. I mean, he needs to do this. It's just gotten out of hand. I mean, we've seen Charlie Kirk got slaughtered on air. I mean, it was just, this is horrifying. We need to take these people down.
You know, I agree. And you know, obviously, I understand, you know, partway why people would be suspicious of this, because the idea is, just like they've done over and over, you do 9/11, everybody freaks out, oh my God, we have to do something. And then they go, okay, well, great, we're going to war in Iraq and we're going to war in Afghanistan. We're passing the Patriot Act, and now you know, have to get patted down by the TSA every time you go through. And people were willing to accept it because of the state of emotional vulnerability they were put in by being traumatized by what they saw on live TV. So I understand that people feel like what we're doing here is, oh my God, Charlie Kirk got murdered. That's so scary. Please, daddy government, save me. That's not what I'm saying at all. And I'm concerned, or I'm you know, aware of the threat of, you know, them using this emotionally powerful thing to then, you know, transgress or impose upon our rights. But I don't think that's what's happening here, and I don't think there's a major threat to it, in the same way that I don't see a major threat to American citizens just because ICE is rounding up immigrants, right? It's like ICE goes after immigrants, and like, sure, if they were doing to American citizens what they're doing to immigrants, that would be wrong and horrible and crazy if we had, you know, mass ICE agents ripping people out of their homes for speech violations like they do in the UK. Like, I'd be against that with everything I've got. But if they're going after illegal immigrants, what is the big deal? Right? And so the left goes, oh, they're Nazis. They're rounding people up and they're breaking up families. But it's like, well, it's illegal immigrants. They're punishing people that broke the law. This is all in line with the Constitution. It's actually the basis of government itself, to protect people inside a geographic area from those outside. So what is the issue here? So that's, I'm aware of sort of the methods that people will use to psyop us into accepting restrictions on our constitutional rights, but I just don't see that happening here. What I do see is our constitutional rights are being stripped from us in a de facto way, because when we try to exercise them, the left attacks us. So it doesn't matter if it's leftist mobs who stop us from speaking or the government who stops us from speaking. Our rights are being violated at this point. I've got videos from a guy who tried to set up a table kind of similar to Charlie Kirk. He did it at a historic black university. And they rioted and they attacked him and they kicked him off campus. And it's like, okay, so that's the heckler's veto. That is a violation of the First Amendment. He has a right to be in public in a place that taxpayer funds pay for without being assaulted. But that right has been stripped from him now, and the cop is standing there to the side letting him be attacked. So Again, I don't see I see a threat to our rights existing already in the radical left. All these people. There's a guy with a screwdriver as a weapon, you know, waiting to attack the people trying to exercise their First Amendment rights. So we got to uphold our rights. And right now our rights are being stripped from us by the left, who's out of control. So I don't know. That's my reasoning. Thank you for the call, Kelly. I really do appreciate it. We'll go to one more call here before the end of the show. Matt in New York wants to talk about the autopsy. There was an autopsy performed, apparently, allegedly. There was an autopsy performed, Charlie Kirk autopsy. When will a detailed report be released after Utah shooting? Here's what we know. This is from the Hindustan Times. This was 10 days ago, though. So we haven't had it released yet, as far as I know. Charlie Kirk was assassinated Wednesday. The 31-year-old was speaking at Utah Valley University. Kirk's remains were flown from Salt Lake City to Phoenix, Arizona, his hometown, with J.D. Vance and Second Lady Ursha Vance. But apparently there was an autopsy. The results have not been fully released, but according to the news, there was an autopsy performed. So that's sort of the intro to your topic, Matt. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, what I'm looking at is that we're looking at a bullet, and there's other things that I think that could come into play here, like possibly the earpiece having a detonation with a projectile on it. Because if you look at it, the way he jerked and everything like that, And you know, with the Israelis, with the pagers and everything, and then you would have a sure-fired way where you wouldn't miss a shot. It would absolutely happen, and the trajectory is right on point. I think he had an earpiece, well, possibly. Just speculation that it could have been an earpiece with a detonation and a projectile, because they got to have weapons out there that we have no idea what they are. You know what I mean? And that would eliminate any malfeasance. You know what I mean? That would be 100% kill. You know what I mean?
You know,
and the way it opened up and everything looked like it just looked different, man. You know what I mean? It just looked different, and it definitely came from the back. The way he moved and everything, and that was an exit wound, man. You know what I mean? And one more thing, the FBI stands for Fugazi Barbarian Indians now. And shout out to my man Valhalla Patel.
That's pretty good. You know, out of all the speculation, the one that I think has the most legitimacy might be something like that. Just from what we know about the technology that's available, the reason I don't believe, because I think that's more likely than like the trap door having anything to do with it. I frankly think it's more likely than a shooter off to his right, even though I know a lot of people, you know, are going towards that direction. Because I think I understand there were like weird angles in the courtyard where it happened, but from the first video I saw, there was a loud crack, sound like a rifle shot, and everybody turns and looks to the right. And the camera was up high, and it just looked like a sniper shot. What I don't really buy is, like, wouldn't people hear the bang? Don't they hear the direction that it comes from? And I haven't heard anybody say, oh, that sounded like an explosion coming from Charlie. You know, Candace Owens just came out with a pretty interesting video about a guy who filmed the shooter before the shot. He just says it's a smaller caliber.